You are about to opt in to Monerotopia, a show for the Monero community where all are welcome to join. From noob to maxi, no matter what bags you hold. Just sit back and relax to the sweet sounds of Monero's latest progress. Or if you're feeling inspired, join us on stage. Remember, the only thing that can stop Monero is a false belief that it can be stopped. And if you want to win the revolution faster, we recommend you remove your XMR from all custodial exchanges immediately. Warning, voting accidents are common around here. Don't forget to properly secure your private keys. Monerotopia starts now.
First off, happy birthday, Monero.
Yay.
Oh, I don't have it on this, so.
You've been out of the game, been out of the loop.
Been out of the loop.
Wow, so it took Monero's birthday for Sunita to come back.
Just for a little
bit. So will this be the tradition every 10th?
Every 10th, yep. I will come back on the show. I'll say a sweet hello.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, my sister came up with that idea, actually. She's like, do you have a cake? I was like, no, I don't have a cake.
We should, yeah.
So then I had a little
happy birthday, cookie.
Yeah, lighters. So we'll save it. Maybe towards the end. Let's happy birthday. Maybe on the fourth hour mark, maybe fifth hour.
by Monero's 11th birthday, we'll be ready to do. That's really what we should do in honor of Monero's 10th birthday. We should do like a year-long show.
You can do that, and you have fun.
It's just like the StreamYard just runs 24/7. People can hop in and out whenever they feel like
it. Yeah.
Monero's development growth, do we get to that stage where we just have Monerotopia running 24/7? When do we reach that point? Do we ever reach that point? Like the Bloomberg of...
We attempted that once, but then our laptop died. Remember for the fight? That MMA fight? So
we
the guy...
sleep with Monero
because
running.
We had this MMA fighter on, and he didn't fight until, like, I think it was, like, 4 in the morning or something. And, you know, Doug was like, oh, let's have a special show. So I think we started it at, like, 8 p.m., and, like, the fight still wasn't going on. So then we were like, all right, guys, we'll leave it live for you. But then it like
forgot about that.
The bat
did it ever happen?
Died.
Yeah.
Well, the fight.
Oh no!
Up.
Oh no!
Yeah, I think he lost.
I think he lost. Though, sadly. Lost. So then we were like, "It's okay. It wasn't recorded."
Whatever happened to that guy? He was a character.
Yeah, I don't.
You remember his name? If you're out there, jump on viewers on stage, man. We'd love to hear from you. It's been a while.
We haven't heard for you in a while.
Forget. Tense individual, MMA fighter, got into Monero. Very cool dude. And yeah, that was an epic episode.
It was really funny
because
we tried. Yeah. I think the battery, I don't know what happened, but it was entertaining. You should look back at our archives. I'm sure you'll find it and find it entertaining now.
Tux, when did you start watching Monerotopia, or was it, were you a Monero Talk viewer first and then found your way? Were you here when we started Monerotopia, or you were here after? I forget.
It's definitely after. It was a couple of years ago. I started listening to Monero Talk, just like the podcast by itself, because I could do it while I worked. And so I just listened to like dozens and dozens of all the like previous Monero Talks. And I don't know if I ever listened to. No, I would watch the recap of Monerotopia also. Starting like last year, and then eventually I'd start watching it like actually like live. Now I'm here, so. Yes, I haven't been in it for like a super long time. I've only been in it for like Monero in general for a couple of years, but Monero Talk definitely was like one of the big things when I was discovering like Monero. When I looked into it, I'm like, oh wow, there's this whole show literally dedicated just for interviewing people for like Monero stuff and privacy stuff. So yeah.
Awesome. I'm always shocked by the people I meet that don't know about Monero Talk. I'm like, how do you not know us? I mean, so many people do know us, and then once like we see you, I'm like, they're like, oh no, I didn't know there was a show just dedicated to it. Like, yeah, I guess we don't have the best SEO, that's for sure. Speaking of which, like and share, guys. Let's get it going. What are we at? We're at 46. Come on,
smash the like, everybody.
Yeah, are we? Let me check it out on Twitter.
I'll even bring Body up, see if he wants to say anything. Yo, Body.
Yeah, let's bring him up.
Hello, Body.
Yeah, he's still muted. Must be getting ready.
Yeah, he probably is.
So we have 30 live. Yeah, well, people are used to tuning in on Saturdays at 11 a.m.
We got a decent amount for Thursday. We got all the West Coast.
Wow,
we have 52.
That number's going to go up. People.
Hello, everyone.
People know it's Monero's birthday. They're going to come in.
I think.
Hey, happy birthday, guys. Hey.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
I don't know what this is.
Buddy, so what are you feeling right now, given that it's Monero's 10th birthday?
I think it's awesome.
Is this listening?
Like, I can't tell you how many times on Twitter and other places I wanted to be like, Monero's been around for a decade, you know, like it's not going anywhere. But then people would be like, it hasn't been a decade. Like, okay, when we hit a decade, I'll be able to say this finally.
Like now I
don't have to like, you know, put practically a decade or basically a decade. I don't have to qualify it.
The Lindy effect, right? The longer something exists, the more likely it will continue to exist.
Yep.
Yeah, I think we got that going pretty well. So, you know, Monero, Bitcoin, Ethereum, right? Those are really the old school cryptos at this point. Are there others that fit into that? Like,
believe it or not, XRP falls into that.
Bitcoin, XRP.
Yeah. Yeah, they've been around for a while and they survived the SEC attack. So, I don't know how their price is looking. I mean,
maybe Dash.
Is it really a coin? Oh, yeah, Dash.
Yeah, that one showed up again recently. I hadn't heard about that one in a long time.
I think that was one of the coins I used to look at relative to Monero, just to be like, haha, little fake privacy coin.
It's crazy to be that Monero's already 10, because I've only found out about it a couple of years ago. When Monero came out, I was in high school. I was really young. I was 10 years ago. It's crazy.
Monero's almost older than you, Tux. Oh, man. So, Tux, how has your, like, perception changed of Monero? So, I mean, you haven't been here, like you said, too long, but you've been here during some interesting times. How are you feeling about Monero from when you first got in to where we are now?
It definitely has. It's one of the cooler crypto communities that I've seen for sure. That it's, like, it's a really niche and small project, yet it has an insane amount of, like, active community people and active developers. My understanding is that it's one of the largest crypto in terms of like active developers and people that actually work on the project. And I think when I first got into it, it was before the last hard fork. So it was when ring signatures were still 11, and then eventually 16. When was that? That was in 2022, right? Or was that even before? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, that was the August 2022 fork.
Okay, yeah. Yep. Yeah, I think I got into Monero around the beginning of 2022. But yeah, it's just only gotten better over time. And of course, we're right around the road for full chain membership proofs, which will be like insanely huge, thanks to people like Luke Parker putting a lot of effort into that.
Yeah, it's cool to think. I mean, in 10 years, everything Monero accomplished, give it another 10 years, what kind of things are we going to... What's going to be on the horizon at the two-decade birthday for Monero? That's some pretty cool stuff.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what were some of the biggest upgrades Monero has had to date?
I came in right around RandomX. I think that was, I mean, to me, that was just a phenomenal innovation. It was what Satoshi was trying to do from the very beginning. And it's crazy that it took almost 10 years after he invented Bitcoin for CPU mining to actually get implemented in even a single chain and have it like prove itself over the course of the next 5 years after that.
Yeah, it was amazing that there was like some disagreement over RandomX too, right? That it there were those that were I was surprised of the amount of people that were opposed to trying to be ASIC resistant at the time. It seemed to align so well with what Monero was meant to be.
Yeah, I can kind of understand it in some ways because if you're not technically versed on CPU architecture, you might look at that and say, well, you know, it's probably not doable, but. I mean, what was good is that what I really love to see in the Monero community, like, for example, our CEO, our chief leader, Fluffy Pony, he was against it. And, you know, he was the lead maintainer for the repository, and he didn't think it was a good idea. So rather than stop it, he said, okay, let's just make sure the people that were against it said, let's just make sure we have some backup, a backup option in place. We'll just flip to an ASIC-friendly algorithm if RandomX doesn't work. But he didn't stand in the way, which is... It's funny because, you know, Monero gets accused a lot of times from certain people of being centralized. Like, how can you hard fork all the time if you're not centralized? Nobody's going to agree. And it's like, no, the people in the project are just mature enough to do the give and take, to have that dance, to have good discussions, backup plans, and to, you know, allow innovation to try and happen if and when possible.
Yeah, I mean, another big one, obviously confidential transactions, when that was first implemented into Monero, that was around when I first showed up. I don't think I was in. I may have had Monero before. Yeah, right before they implemented confidential transactions. It was around 2016, 2017. That was obviously tremendous. And then the other extremely memorable one was Bulletproofs. That was tremendous at the time. Like, it transformed Monero.
Looking at the blockchain growth chart, like comparing when Bulletproofs or when RingCT was used, and then Bulletproofs kicked in, it's still funny to me. Just how like transactions went from like 10 kilobytes to a couple. And then they're probably about to go back up to 10 kilobytes, but for a much more worthy purpose, I think.
Yeah, that was a big eye-opener for me in terms of, like, understanding the tech and being like, oh, wow, we're going to continue to evolve and improve. Like, it, like, got me excited about the fact that Monero will likely be able to overcome its challenges, because at the end of the day, it is software, and it can evolve, and it can improve, and the cryptography will improve. Like, seeing that major improvement in cryptography happen like that and be so transformational was exciting, which is what we're seeing now. Like, full membership proofs is giving me that feeling again. Like, that is going to be right up there with the confidential transactions in my mind. I don't know if you guys have thoughts on that.
It's like the last missing piece. I mean, there's other stuff, of course, but full membership proofs is like the last kind of plugging of major holes, and not holes, but weaknesses in the privacy of Monero. Undoubtedly, there will be other stuff, hopefully some kind of layer two. But yeah, the full membership proofs is crazy good upgrade.
Yeah, back to the Bulletproofs for a second. I don't know if anybody saw Benedict Bund was tweeting this week, and I retweeted him. That guy is an impressive individual. I don't know, Tux, if you could bring up that tweet.
Yeah, let me see.
We had him. I interviewed him right after Monero had implemented Bulletproofs. You go back and watch it. It was in the early days of Monero talk. I think I did that one in like my parents' living room. I was like there for the weekend. Not that our production value has improved that much since then, but it was really bad. It was really bad. But it's cool. You could watch Benedict Bund's, and it was exciting to hear him talk back then. But recently, he just tweeted, unrelated to his developments in cryptography, he tweeted out how he just ran a marathon. And his average mile time was like 5 minutes and 35 seconds or something. I'm like, this guy is just otherworldly. To be that skilled intellectually and then physically as well, completely on another level. So mad respect for him, for Benedict Bund's. He's at like the body level.
Bro, I'm definitely not that impressive physically. You asked me to run a mile. Maybe the best I've ever done in my whole life would be 6 minutes.
Yeah. I used to be able to break six, but like it was 1 mile. At my peak, I think maybe I ran.
Yeah,
I ran like a five and a half minute mile or something. But to do that for 20,
that's a deadlift,
24 miles straight. That's freaking insane.
That's insane.
While having
definitely would shout Nike if I ever managed to do that.
But while having that extreme intelligence at the same time, right? Where like, he's not just focused on running. Like, running is his little side hobby that keeps him healthy, and he's like mastered that as well. That just
blows my mind. People like that.
All right, I gotta go follow.
Oh,
I've never heard of him.
What's that? Oh, you gotta go look up the guy to see again.
Yeah, I've never heard of him.
Yeah, Benedict Bund's. Check him out. Hopefully, maybe we see him do more for Monero. Maybe we see him get active again in like the cryptography side of things for Monero. I'm not exactly clear as to what he's working on. He's working on some. I think he's doing ZK rollup stuff. What, buddy? Can you briefly explain the whole ZK rollup thing?
Yeah, it's like crypto magic that allows you to post a single proof on chain of a whole bunch of activity that took place off chain, such that anyone whose activity was rolled up can look at that proof and verify that their transaction was included in that. I think it's something special magic with hashes, basically, and hashing trees and whatnot. Technically speaking, on Ethereum, they're able to do it better because they have a general code execution platform, so they can create contracts where the validation gets performed inside the contract. And Coin, it would either require a soft fork for some like specific ZK rollup construction, such that the transaction can't get approved unless it's cryptographically solid, cryptographically sound. Or they can implement it with something like BitVM or, you know, by like some crazy complex construction inside of the witness data. I think personally, I think like they're pretty cool. I think it's showing promise. No one that's made a ZK rollup thus far has actually handed over their admin keys on Ethereum. So it's all still, it's effectively like these custodial Lightning providers. You know, it's like they're still this centralized failure point where they could sweep your funds. They could rug you if they wanted to. But it's interesting. And, you know, maybe with given enough time, maybe another 5 or 10 years, it could actually be like a legitimate layer two. I have like this crazy, delusion that one day we might get some rollups on Monero that would require all sorts of development. So like, don't count on that at all. That's just me like wishful thinking.
It's, I don't know. Maybe it's not, I'm sure if you ran that by Luke Park, you'd be like, yeah, sure, we can do that.
He had some interesting things to say about it. You know, he's like really balanced and very detailed when he gives answers. So it was kind of like, he gave me just enough that I could keep that hope. But also kind of dashed it against the rocks so that I could come back to reality at the same time. I don't know how he's good at doing that, but he kept my hopes alive while sort of like being like, oh.
Yeah, I saw they were you following the discussion this week? Did you guys follow the discussion on the in the research lab? I know there was more talk about full chain membership proofs and the direction they're ultimately going to take. I think things are kind of like still seem to be in the air as to whether or not they go the route of implementing it before Seraphis, or if they implement it after, or if they even kind of potentially just abandon Seraphis altogether. I don't know. Have you guys been keeping up with that at all?
I have not.
I haven't paid attention to those talks either.
Yeah, okay. Maybe we'll get Recon Man's take on that. I think he's been involved in those discussions. All right. Yeah, I can't read the comments from here, so I don't know if I'm missing any good ones, but I saw this one by Edward McLean. I want to thank Vic and Cake for all he's done over the years and improving the software offering and supporting development of the protocol and ecosystem. Yeah, 100%. Not only has Vic provided a utility in the form of Cake Wallet, being the first iOS open source Monero wallet, and then evolving into much more. But as he's done that, he's turned the revenue that he's receiving from Cake and the features that are implemented in it. He's using that revenue to not only further improve Cake's products, but to give back to the Monero ecosystem through funding development, funding Monero Talk and Monerotopia. Funding all sorts of things, but probably biggest impact being funding, you know, assisting in funding Monero development, helping out with the funding of Sarai, so many things, an endless list. So major props to Vic and Cake Wallet, of course, especially on Monero's birthday. Cheers, Vic. We appreciate it. I don't know, Tux, if there's anything you want to say in that regard. I don't know you don't want to, you know, kiss your boss's ass.
No, I love him. I love Vic. I've always loved him since I started following him on Twitter, like a year ago. He's always been that businessman, that Monero businessman. I've always seen him as like, he's like the super professional business guy, but he's still into Monero. He brings a bit more of seriousness to Monero, but he's also really fun. He's like, he's really smart and good at what he does, but he's also cool and fun.
Wow, you really are kissing his ass.
It feels the love.
I have to agree with you. We love hanging out with Vic. He's just a good guy. Vic, why don't you jump up on stage? Why don't we have him jump up now? Because I don't know if he's down to. Vic, jump up.
I'd sent him the StreamYard. He can totally come up if he wants to.
Yeah, well, we could bring up various different guests as we go. It's Monero's birthday. Then we'll eventually do a viewers on stage, I'm sure. But Vic, if you're around now and want to jump up, please do.
We have a question in the comments. What are full membership proofs?
Oh, boy. I'll let you answer that one, buddy. You could probably most succinctly answer that question.
So right now, if you want to try and obfuscate which output on chain is sending funds, like, so for example, you're going to send some funds, you have a real output. The way that you obfuscate that is you select 15 decoy outputs from across the chain, and then you put your output in with those other 15 for a total of 16, and you create one signature, and you're not able to tell which of those was the actual output used. Now, this is good, but it's not great because it has weaknesses, particularly kind of for a black marble attack if someone wanted to try and saturate the chain. So instead, full membership proofs is basically like what Zcash does. Essentially, you can sign a signature that signs for the entire, basically over the entire output set of Monero. Some people would want to call it the UTXO set, which is the phraseology they would use in Bitcoin. But effectively, a single signature is able to represent any output in the entire output space. So that brings you from an anonymity set for each transaction from 16 to basically however many millions of outputs we have. It's much stronger privacy. It closes up a lot of gaps, a lot of weaknesses in the privacy of Monero. It's like one of the last remaining pieces that we need to really, truly have like a really, really solidly private chain. It's Zcash does this, but they have weaknesses with their implementation. It's good privacy, but without getting into the details, like they just didn't implement it in a way that seemed fair to people. And it's kind of always one of the things Zcash is like, well, we do this and y'all can't. And we're like, well, yeah, okay, but your implementation. But once we close this, it's like there's really no privacy coin that has really anything on Monero in terms of a monetary sense. The best that we could see after that would be like a private smart contract platform, but those are still nascent at best.
Yeah, this will be the first major upgrade that I've seen for Monero, other than the last hard fork, but that one wasn't quite as major. Full chain membership proofs will be the big, like, because I came into Monero at a good time when it was already like had all these features, like bulletproofs was already a thing, like long after or long before I got into it. Dandelion Plus Plus and the amounts being hidden with bulletproofs. And then ring signatures were already at 11. And then quickly after I got into it, it turned to 16. So I got even better. But full chain membership proofs is going to be, that's a pretty major advancement for how the sender and the receiver really gain privacy.
So what do we got? We got 135 live here, Dewey. Dewey, is that the real number, Tux?
Twitter saying 105, which means it's probably not completely correct. But if I look right now, I can go and see how many people are actually watching on Twitter.
Guys, let's like and share. Let's get the word out. Let's bring in noobs. Let's try to get some noobs into the Monero ecosystem here today. People stumbling across Monero.
Yeah, we got Vic in the backstage. Should I go ahead and pull him up?
Yeah, let's bring him up.
Hey, Vic.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
Oh, wow. So much reflection. Take these off. How you guys doing?
Good, man. Good. How you doing?
Good, good. I think the stream I was listening to on YouTube, I guess I was behind. I was listening. So I was hearing all these nice things about me. I'm like, oh, let me get on. But I guess that already happened.
No, we've been talking about you the entire time. You just haven't caught up yet.
This is the Vic appreciation stream.
Oh, great. That's awesome. Finally. Usually I'm getting abused by everyone.
Really?
I just want to correct you on something. You said I funded a lot of things, yes, but you said helped fund Sarai. I did.
Okay.
I try to give Luke money, but he just won't take it. He just wants me to buy some server that's like $1.5 million. And I'm like, I don't know if he's serious or if he's, because he's always... having fun at my expense. So you remember, even in Dallas, he was like,
"Yeah, you're dealing with a sarcastic genius." It's
yeah.
Good luck.
Exactly. So although we didn't fund in any way Sarai, but we did commit to implementing Sarai and Cake Wallet and working with them to get that done. You know, putting resources
right.
that. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought yes. Because so what was Sarai funded in any way then? No, it was just Luke then
just his own own philanthropy, I guess, gift he's giving to the community. It's really amazing. And believe me, I try. I'm like, take something. But, you know, maybe in the audits and things like that, we can help out. So, you know, we've offered to do that if we need to pay for audits or something. So. He knows we're here and I'm here, but like I said, we'll at least put resources towards implementing it.
Very cool. Very cool. I mean, so what would you see as some of the most significant contributions you made to Monero in terms of like funding things and protocol related developments?
I mean, we definitely donate to the general fund. We've donated to, you know, what is that called? CCS? CCS? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We donate to that regularly, you know. What else? We donate to your show.
Right. Let's not forget that. Yeah. Definitely significant.
What else? I mean, Monero Con, we've been the number one sponsor for Monero Con every year. Monerotopia.
Yeah.
Conference.
Tremendous.
Meetups.
My God.
All the meetups you and I've done together.
Yeah.
Cindy there as well, of course. From God, we've been doing those since 2018. We started. We formed that meetup group.
Yeah. And then, you know, if you flying devs in to give their talks, amazing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we've done that. Who did we sponsor at Monero meetups in New York? Justin, before he was with Cake. Yeah, Justin Ehrenhofer, that is. And then Diego, before he stabbed me in the back and started Stack Wallet. I'm kidding. Diego and I talk almost every day.
Yeah?
No. We talk pretty much. Either through messaging or actual phone call. Yeah, we might be competing on the wallet front, but we talk quite often. Even the Monerujo guy, I met him in New York a few times. I was surprised he's my age. I don't want to dox him, but and I'm like, look at this old guy running these wallets, you know.
That is really funny. Yeah, he said the same thing. Yeah. We met him at MoneroCon.
Oh man, yeah.
That is kind of ironic.
Yeah, yeah. You asked a question earlier, I guess, since I was behind, that what have been some of the best developments in Monero?
Mm, yeah.
And I think from a user standpoint, of course, there's been a lot of developments on the privacy and the back-end work. But from a user standpoint, or like a wallet operator, I think when Bulletproofs came in and your transaction fees went from $2 to less than a penny, you know, it was insane, because $2 just makes microtransactions just impossible. And
totally agree with you on that. I think that was probably the biggest.
Yeah, Sarang, even in Chicago, I was joking, as a joke, I announced to everyone, I said, hey, Sarang is here. He's the one that put in Bulletproofs, and he promised us 20 cents, but when it actually went live, it was like 0.2 penny, two tenths of a penny, right?
Yeah.
And, so that was amazing. I thought that was the turning point for Monero. Just made it very usable every day. And I think there was another synchronization thing that was improved. And again, from a usability wallet standpoint, I think that was huge. Because I remember when we launched Cake Wallet, January 2018, it would take forever to sync, you know, a few thousand blocks. Like, really forever. It was so super slow. And if you compare that to now, you know, well, not now, not last 3 weeks. Last 3 weeks have been terrible. But yeah, I thought that was huge as well.
We were talking about, did you hear us talking about Benedict Bunce?
I remember you interviewed him. I remember when you interviewed him as well. Yeah, interesting guy. So he's cool. Fit, he's running marathons, and we're just sitting on our asses.
I know, that guy makes me feel like such lesser of a man. I'm like this guy is just trying to tell people about Monero. This guy is like freaking Einstein / Olympic runner
/ Usain Bolt.
But the fact that he has contributed to Monero like makes me, you know, another indication when Monero attracts these uber geniuses, I'm like, all right, we must be onto something, that they're dedicating their time, their brain power to Monero.
Yeah,
means a lot. Obviously he was dedicating it to Bulletproofs itself, but
did he do Bulletproofs Plus as well, or
no?
Was that Sarang or somebody?
Yeah, I think it was somebody else. And then we have Liam Egan, actually. I think he developed Bulletproofs Plus or Plus Plus.
Oh, I see.
I can't keep up with them. Still learning here. But he's going to come to Monerotopia, which is very
good.
Cool.
Excellent.
And I think Luke was excited about that, because he'd be able to hang out with him in there. Which brings me to Monerotopia. I think we're finally ready to officially pivot. We've been talking about it. We put everything on hold. Sorry about that, folks. But it just wasn't working out in Buenos Aires. Obviously, we had that vision, all the reasons why it would be so great to do it there. That's what got us excited about it. Malay, cryptocurrency is arguably beginning to naturally flourish there. But the things in the minus column are really starting to add up. the fact that it's so far away. Right?
Yeah, people were complaining it was too far.
I kind of ignored that at first, but it was coming as we talked to people. We were like, okay, yeah, that's far. That's far. So it's far for a lot of people. For those people in Argentina, it's not far. But we got a lot of the Monero community keys coming from the States or from Europe. Argentina is far from pretty much everywhere except Argentina or Brazil. So there was that. And then really, even more so, the bigger reason was we were just having difficulty getting the marketplace off the ground. And we didn't want it to be a shitty marketplace. We want it to be legit, where all the vendors are accepting Monero. And we weren't seeing that happening. We were trying to negotiate with them through various means, and we were getting a bad feel, right? It felt like it was too risky. Could we have made it happen? Maybe, but it felt too risky. So we decided to pivot, move it back to Mexico City, do it at Huerta Roma again, where it worked out beautifully. Tux, you could attest to that, right?
It was a good spot.
It was a
nice spot. I mean, it was a little rough around the edges and some things in the venue.
Oh, yeah.
Overall, it was a really cool spot, for sure.
Definitely rough around the edges in terms of utilities, electricity, and internet, which are pretty vital for a cryptocurrency conference.
We didn't realize that.
but we still made the best of it. Everybody had an amazing time. And those things we think we can fix pretty easily, so... With those things fixed, then we feel like it's going to be super stellar. And then we're going to be able to work with the same marketplace we worked with last year to improve it and have it humming along. We'll have local nodes running down there. That was another issue. Even with when the internet was working and electricity was up, people were just having trouble actually using Monero in the real world. It became a great real test case for it. Kind of one of the issues was... syncing wallets, connecting to nodes. So if you had local nodes running there, we're going to work on making it very usable for Monero during those days. And actually, that's another point. It's not going to be 2 days.
It's going to be 4 days.
It's going to be 4 days, guys. So we're going to do it Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. This spaces things out. It was a marathon. We had like 8 talks a day on the main stage or more, like nonstop. From one talk to the next, all amazing content, while simultaneously having a second stage where we had virtual talks all day, like another 10 talks a day. So it was just so much content coming at you. Plus we had the marketplace. So like anytime people did something, they were missing out on something else. It's still going to be a marathon, but it'll just be a longer one.
I'm sure it'll be jam packed.
So this one. We'll stretch it out. This will let people like feel like they could do a little, they won't be missing all the talks, and they'll still have time to kind of hang out with each other, hang out on the marketplace. So it's going to be Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
One of the reasons we made it 4 days, too, is because the girl that we wanted to do the marketplace with, Jimena, that did the marketplace with us last year, wasn't able to run the marketplace on Saturday and Sunday because there's already another marketplace that's taking place there. So now we actually have two marketplaces as well.
So you can't complain you couldn't buy anything.
Jimena's going to run her marketplace on Thursday, Friday. And that we'll know that'll be really great. And then we're going to have a second marketplace come in for Saturday and Sunday. And Jimena's going to work with them to make sure they all learn the whole Monero thing as well. So that'll be super cool too, right? So we'll get two sets of vendors, different vendors coming in. So very excited about it. Do you want to bring up the website? Should we bring up the website?
Tux, pull it
up.
You want to bring up?
Yeah, pull it up. Tux, pull it up.
But
Vic, how's Monerotopia looking for you November? What do you think?
Yeah, I'll be there for sure. Definitely.
Sweet.
Yeah. You know, can I just take some credit here? Why you have a lot of viewers today?
Go for it.
Because of our giveaway. So we're doing a...
Oh,
we're doing
let's
a,
do it.
Well... Tux is going to run it, but we're doing a giveaway. You might want to wait till the end so people don't...
Yeah, got to keep people watching.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, we announced...
Very end. That was...
We're doing a giveaway on Twitter, and then we announced that we're going to announce it on Monerotopia. So Tux is going to run Twitter Picker and announce the winners. 10 people get $25 each in Monero.
Awesome. So can people still participate right now if they post their...
I guess they can retweet whatever, follow the instruction in the tweet, and they can do that until Tux announces the winners.
So
if you haven't drawn the winners yet, have you, Tux?
Nope.
No.
Yet.
So if you're listening and you have not participated yet, there's still time to be a contestant and to potentially win $25 in Monero.
This is in Crypto Scrambler.
There will be 10 winners. She said this.
This is in Crypto Scrambler because he started to
Crypto Scramble. I don't know if you guys remember that one.
It was like a one-time thing that we did like years ago.
I'm bringing it back though. We're bringing Crypto Scramble back. So guys, go ahead. What do you have to do? You just have to like, retweet. You just have to post your Monero address, right? And like and retweet.
Yeah, you got to post your CakeWallet receive screen, follow CakeWallet, follow the Monero.com account.
How many likes and retweets does it have right now?
100. And how many messages?
152.
Wow. Okay. That's still pretty
coming
snots.
Out of Woodworks for that XMR giveaway.
That's sweet. Yeah. I like that. You guys do that all the time.
Right. Hey, that's good. 10 years in Monero, huh? Of Monero, it's crazy.
I know, Vic. Give us some more wisdom, some more, you know.
Touch, was that you and I are talking today that out of Monero's 10 years, Cake's been around for 6 years.
Yep.
Doesn't sound that much now, but when Monero's, you know, 20 years and Cake's been around for 16 years of the 20 years, then it sounds more impressive.
I mean, 6 years is still pretty good. That's more than half the time.
Yeah. The wisdom, I don't know, wisdom.
What is that?
You have the stage.
Looking forward to what Luke is doing. And,
you have this.
Yeah, the stage. There's no wisdom. And just looking forward to what Luke and Justin Berman are doing. Just amazing. I think it's going to radically change Monero. And the weakest link has always been the ring signatures. Mm-hmm. I don't understand the tech. I mean, I try to have Luke explain it to me, and then he starts talking, and then my eyes glaze over, and I'm like, And they just nod and pretend like I know what he's talking about. But you know, we can get rid of ring signatures and get rid of that weak point, then that'd be awesome.
Yeah, amazing. I don't think there's anything more exciting than that happening right now in Monero, other than I'd say Monero's growing adoption. Any insights into that? I mean, you have a good perspective there with CakeWallet. Do you feel like more people are using Monero? Or is there any data to back that up?
I think so. I mean, if you just go by downloads, I mean, from the month we launched 6 years ago, we've never had a down month in installs. We've like grown every month to month. So you'd think that would, you know, being a non-custodial wallet, of course, we can't see anything more than that. But just going by downloads alone, you would think that Monero usage is going up and more people are exposed to it. Although we have come across some people that say, hey, I'm only using CakeWallet for Bitcoin, or I'm only using CakeWallet for Litecoin. But if you look at the exchange data, most of the exchanges, I would say 80% of the exchanges that are done in Cake are Monero related, either going to Monero or going from Monero. But I'd say 80% is Monero related, and probably 90% of that is people going from whatever coin into Monero. So it seems like a lot of people are using CakeWallet to get Monero. Aha, get Monero. So yeah, that's some statistics there. Number of trades keep going up every month. Number of transactions, we can't see the transactions, of course, but the number of exchange transactions keep going up every month.
Mm-hmm.
So. So it seems like, I mean, it's definitely growing. There's a guy on Twitter, I forget his name. He's like a gold guy, and he's always bashing Bitcoin. And all of a sudden now he's tweeting about Monero. And you should have him on. He's from New Mexico. But it's something we talk about in the Monero community, right? If Bitcoin and Monero were launched today at the same time, you would be like, well, why would I want to use a transparent blockchain, right? And maybe now that both things have been out for so long, and a new person like him coming into the space, and now that's coming out to be true, right? They're saying, mm-hmm. Well, why would I use this transparent chain with such high fees, with, you know, potentially tainted coins or preferred coins, wherein I should be using this, where it's totally private and each transaction is like a new transaction, blah, blah, blah.
Right. We've been waiting for that time when people enter the space and they're like, Monero is what Bitcoin's supposed to be. And yeah, maybe that's finally starting to happen now. That's a good point. He's an example of that. I don't really know much about the guy, but yeah, I guess he's kind of a gold bug,
that just is like just getting into crypto, right?
Yeah. Then I think sometime back, I tweeted back to him something like, "Have fun staying poor," or something.
Yeah,
we managed to narrow. Yeah, yeah. I'm like, "Yeah, just kidding. Use my wallet."
Yeah. Welcome aboard.
My new response to "Have fun staying poor" is, I think Dr. Trace Meme Brain, or I can't remember his exact name on Twitter, but in his bio, it's like he says, "We can have fun staying poor longer than you can stay maxi." So that's just what I respond to people from now on.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I like saying have fun staying rich. Try to bring some positivity into his space, you know?
Look, you see so much.
You know, talking about Bitcoin, I'm looking at you, reading your comments on the side. There's a comment by Anti-Demon. It says, "I used to think that Bitcoin had a privacy system like Monero." And then the next comment, my privacy OG, says, "I love Cake Wallet. Can't wait to see what the future holds for it." So can I just say something about Bitcoin and Cake Wallet first? I know this is a Monero day and Monerotopia, but we are bringing some level of privacy to Bitcoin and Cake Wallet. I don't know if you heard about silent payments.
Yeah. Yes. Go ahead. Yeah. Tell us. Yep.
It's
the alpha addresses.
Exactly. So it's BIP-352, silent payments, Bitcoin Improvement Protocol 352. So you know how, like, right now, if I want to send you Bitcoin, you generate an address for that wallet and you send it to me. And now Tux wants to send you Bitcoin, but of course you don't want to share the same address because then you'll be able to see the other outputs, other transactions in that same address. So you generate a new address for Tux, right? So I think that was BIP-32, if my memory is correct. So, which was a huge improvement, right? So you're not using the same address over and over again. But you as a receiver have to send it to Tux. You have to send it to me. We have to keep asking you for a new address, right? The silent payments is, and don't ask me about the encryption, cryptography, and the tech behind it, but silent payment address, you create one silent payment address that starts with SP, and you can give that address to me, you can give that address to Tux, you can whoever, you can even put it on the Monerotopia website for donations or tickets or whatever. But every time somebody uses that one silent payment address, the sender's wallet will generate a new address for you. So, you know, which is cool. It's like if you're taking donations or if you're, whatever, collecting money, you don't have to...
And on-chain, it shows up as just a regular Taproot address.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's functionally very similar to stealth addresses in theory, in the way it functions.
Yeah, the addresses on-chain aren't hashed.
I guess.
Because it's like, you can still, if someone really wants to, they could still send a transaction to that Taproot address that shows up. But no one's ever going to know what that's from.
Right. But it's similar in concept in that it's the sender generating the new address.
Exactly. Yep, they're deriving a new address based on the public key from the recipient's silent payment address. Yeah, so functionally it's similar, and it's cool to see that sort of come to Bitcoin in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that was like such a major breakthrough for me in understanding of Monero too, when stealth addresses, I was like, how? And like that realization that the sender is the one generating, like, that's smart.
Yeah.
That's smart.
So like in Cake Wallet's Bird Pay, right, where you can send to Twitter addresses, Monero addresses is put up there. Who cares, right? No one can look into it. No one can see what's happening. But people are reluctant to put their Bitcoin address, the same one, unless you're like every day you keep changing it. But now you just put your silent payment address in your bio or pin tweet. And now every time somebody uses Bird Pay to send you Bitcoin, a new address will automatically be generated for them. So I think it's going to be pretty cool.
God damn it, Vic. Why'd you have to help out Bitcoin so much, man?
Yeah. Blame.
I love that one, too, when I could just point at their addresses and be like, look, I can see all your...
Now they were like, we're...
Yeah, like, no, yeah.
So actually, we're going to be... We asked to get on stage at the Bitcoin conference to present this. We're the first and only wallet to do it.
That's incredible that Cake is the... Like, you would think, like, everybody in Bitcoin would have been all on top of that.
Well, they don't care about privacy, right? Or they don't understand privacy.
So, but Samurai uses something else. They use, what do they call? Paynim, right? That's, okay.
No comment. I don't want to get the wrath of Samurai.
Don't you dare, man. I'll take you out.
Yeah.
They'll be on the dark,
dark market assassination of.
Yeah, and in person, they're so kind, they're so nice. I'm, you know, met them in Miami 2 years back. I was like, wow, these guys are really cool, very nice, and we had a great conversation. But whatever. And you know what? Anything anyone does for privacy, I'm a fan of. You know, so they use Paynim. Again, I'm not knocking it anyway. Samurai, if you're listening, I'm not knocking it. I love it. But this is an improvement, but it's a little slower. Like, you know, like Monero, you have to scan each block. And scan it
right,
slow.
Right.
With silent payment, that's a drawback. You got to scan each block for that transaction. Right. So that's one drawback. But you know, you sync your wallet every day, and you know, Tux and I are talking all the time about background sync. I think we've got some ideas for that. So you know, hopefully we'll tackle that as well. So yeah, Samurai does use something like that, but a different BIP. They use BIP. BIP 47. What we're using is BIP 352, so it's 10 times better. I'm kidding.
I like the math
there. 10 points.
Yeah. Eight to be exact.
Yeah. Speaking of syncing, how do we get LWS on Cake so we could hook it up with the Nodo? How do we make that happen?
Did we talk about in that in Dallas?
I know, but now I'm asking you in public to trick you into... dedicating to
there's some internal changes coming to Monero and Cake very soon, so those have to be finished first. Changing the libraries. So
yeah, it would just be very awesome, right? So then people running their Nodo, they just put their view key into the Nodo, and they could run their Cake wallet. It would be, you know, instantaneous syncing without any loss of privacy.
Yeah. Have you heard of Monero Dart? I mean the changes. And there's a developer, what's his name? Mr. CJ Nyack or something? CJ.
Yeah, his name's kind of...
CYGen. Mm-hmm. CYGen. Mr. CYGen. He's written all these new Monero libraries. It's an improvement of what Mikola wrote in Cake Wallet back in 2017. Mm. Flutter. I guess for Flutter, he didn't write that in 17. It must have been 18 or 19. Anyway, so... And then going back to Stack Wallet, we're actually working with... Stack Wallet on implementing that in both Cake Wallet and Stack Wallet, and jointly we're paying for the audit. Doug doesn't care because I'm on there. It's just something.
It's like too technical, blah blah blah.
Yeah. So everyone else that's listening, yeah, we're actually working with Stack. We're going to jointly fund the audit of the Monero Dart libraries that this guy is writing, and we're going to implement it in Cake Wallet and Stack Wallet.
Yeah, these new libraries should be a big improvement in several areas and allow us to do some new things, add some new features to Cake, and fix a lot of long-going Monero issues.
Yep, the background sync should be better. We'll be able to bring Cake Wallet to Windows, you know, things like that. The air gap solution for signing transactions.
Tor support.
We'll be able to do that. Yep, Tor support, native Tor support. So a lot of cool stuff coming for Cake Wallet.
Mm. Very cool. Very cool. Who's this guy who created the new libraries?
Mr. CYGen. I mean, that's his, I don't know his real name.
Okay, yeah.
Also goes by Czarek.
Okay. Maybe we get him on a Monerotopia or Monero Talk or something if he's down.
Yeah, you definitely should. I mean, he's drastically changing how usability of Monero in terms of wallets and things. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do you think of all the donations we're seeing coming in to the general fund?
It's all just Vic.
Yeah. She's like, what do I think about it?
No. I mean, some of it is coming from me and Cake Wallet, but not like that. Not those big numbers. No. I mean, we try to give monthly some amount. But those are huge amounts coming in, right? Like we're giving 50,000.
Oh yeah, massive. Yeah. Insane.
Yeah. Wait, how do you bring that up full screen? Oh, there you go.
Oh, yep.
Yeah, it's like somebody just keeps sending 100 XMR. What is it? I'm watching the donations to the Monero General Fund that exceed the amount of 100 XMR. In only a few weeks, 5,700 XMR have been donated, approximately $650,000 in the last couple of weeks.
That's insane.
That's amazing.
And that's during a time when Monero's price is like really, really, really low. So people are still, like, you know, donating a lot, even now.
Yeah. It's amazing. So what's a general fund going to do with all this?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at next.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like here was Luke chiming in. I don't want to take the donations directly, but if this is the current environment, it almost feels like I could independently raise the requested amount.
Hey, people are throwing money. Why not?
I mean, this guy is doing some of the most important work that's, you know, that'll shape the how Monero works in a big way.
Yeah, as soon as he puts up his CCS, it's going to get insta-funded.
Oh, yeah. Within hours, for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it looks like... But, Vic, I don't know if you've been following what's going on in the research lab, but it looks like there hasn't been a decision yet, right, as to whether or not Luke will be moving forward with it pre-Seraphis.
Right. I try not to get involved in those discussions.
Yeah.
Any of this, because... Because supposedly I have too much influence in the Monero community, which I had zero. You saw that Reddit post. Yeah, I just try to stay away from involving in community discussion.
Yeah, no, I just lurk and watch.
Yeah. So Privacy OG is asking, hey, Vic, is there any sort of privacy in Cake Wallet for Ethereum coins? I didn't even know that was even possible. I don't know. Yeah, teach us. If there's
Railgun, right? Isn't that the thing? I don't know how that's... works or implemented, or if it has anything to do with things that need to be done on the wallet side.
Yeah. If there's anything privacy we can do for anything, we'll do it. At least look at it.
Your Railgun's like a ZK privacy thing.
There's a question here from Privacy OG about RandomX.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if it's going to make any of the Bitmain quote unquote ASICs. I guess you just call them miners, really, because they're not ASICs. They're just a bunch of CPUs put together in a single box. I'm not sure if that's going to make it more expensive for them or not, but I think the main point of version 2 was to enable a very fast verification of blocks, which kind of prevents a potential for a DDoS that, for example, if a bunch of malicious nodes decided to start spamming the network with invalid blocks, you might have a hard time parsing through all that, especially if you're not on like really solid hardware. So the proposal here from Tevador, the guy that came up with RandomX, is that we add 32 bytes to the header, and it'll take, instead of 15 milliseconds, something like 300 nanoseconds to verify it. So this would help light wallets, or light nodes, I should say, so they can sort of do a partial verification of the proof of work, and just in general, gives like better security for connecting to untrusted remote nodes. So I think that's the main part of RandomX version 2. But I think there might be a couple other things in there as well. I know there's been some talk about increasing the RAM. I know that sometimes different parts of the technology stack don't always improve at the same time. So I feel like I don't think RAM latency has improved that much, but like as far as your RAM timings. However, there have been other CPU improvements. So there might be some kind of update at some point in the future to RandomX in that regard. Specifically about the different modules and requirements for the algorithm sort of updated as technology has improved. But I mean, you know, CPU mining still works. So I think that's about most of what version 2 of RandomX would include.
And so how about this idea that it's going to brick the Bitmain? Sorry if you covered that, but I was kind of distracted here for a minute.
No, I don't think it's going to brick the Bitmain. The Bitmain miners, although I think are they using RISC-V? I can't remember what the specs on them were. I felt like they were maybe trying to use RISC-V, and I feel like there was some discussion somewhere about RISC-V maybe being significantly less efficient, but I don't think that's the goal. Like these Bitmain miners, they're not ASICs, which give you like 10x, 100x, 100,000x improvement in terms of efficiency, speed, and electricity usage. They're really just a whole bunch of CPUs crammed together into a single box. So, and obviously they've got to sell those, and that means if you want to use it, you've got to buy it. That means they've got to manufacture it. All those things are costs that like most of us don't have, right? Most of us, if you're running a high-end desktop, you know, you've probably got 6, 8, 12, 24 CPUs out, you know, on your machine. And you already spent that. You were already going to spend that. Like so many people have machines, they just wanted like a bunch of processors for whatever random work they're doing. It's hard to beat a zero cost, right? So no matter what Bitmain produces, they're always going up against people that have a zero cost of mining except for the electricity, because your hardware, you basically already had it. So it's going to be really hard for them, no matter what they do, to ever really, really get up to par with that level. Then you've also got the botnets, which effectively also have a zero cost, you know, which maybe we shouldn't celebrate botnets exactly, but in a sense, they do protect the network, and it's going to be hard for an ASIC manufacturer like Bitmain to actually overcome those costs.
Yeah, I always saw the botnets as kind of like an advantage for Monero, but I understand the arguments otherwise. I always thought it was kind of cool that people are choosing to mine Monero when they have the ability to steal computing power.
Yeah, I mean, it is a point. It really is a point in favor in a lot of ways for network. In a social sense, you know, that's like an easy thing to point a finger and be like, look how terrible your network is. It enables drug dealers and botnets. I'm like, well, all right, sure, fine. You know, we'll just yes, Chad. We'll just make a meme and put the yes, Chad in there. Yes.
Right.
Hey, guys, I got to run. Thanks for having me on. Happy 10th anniversary of Monero. Tuck will announce the winners for the cake giveaway sometime, I guess. Have a good show.
Vic, thanks so much, man.
Thanks, Vic.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. You take care.
Be in touch. Very nice, very nice. Thank you, Vic. Actually, so Bitmain, oh, I'm getting a little bit of an echo. Oh, no, now we're good. We actually spoke to Bitmain today. We spoke to them when we were doing Monerotopia last year. They had reached out to us, and they were interested in that time and potentially participating. They didn't really... The people I was talking to at the time didn't really even know that Monero had random X. It was kind of weird conversation. But now they seem a little bit more evolved, and they're interested in potentially participating in Monerotopia, which would be interesting. Maybe even
that would be very interesting because they I guess they're probably seen as kind of like enemy.
Right, and they were even saying that they kind of are realizing that. I'm like, but we don't care. I'm like, you can come to Monerotopia, like give a talk. I'm like, people are going to be fascinated with what you have to say with regards to your miners and whether or not you think that, you know, they would give people an advantage, because a lot of people in the Monero community don't think so. And they were very interested. So they might actually even, we might be able to get them to be even be a sponsor of Monerotopia, which would be amazing.
That would be pretty hilarious, but also really cool. And on the topic of that Antminer X5, the question isn't like that machine specifically, because the efficiency of the processors in there of the RISC-V CPUs was not that great. Didn't even really compete with the newest Ryzen processors you could get. The question is, what do they have now, or what are they currently manufacturing? Because those machines that they sold, well, they were probably already a couple years old. And through manufacturing improvements, lithography improvements, the newer chips could be a lot better. And you could see, even though the efficiency wasn't that like impressive, for a company like them, I mean, it doesn't really matter. They're going to mine. They're going to use their systems anyway. And the question is really like, what do they have now? Like, they could have something way better. Oh, that's a lot more efficient. That would be more appealing to people to buy separately, besides for however long they end up using them for, since they seem to do the thing where they mine on their own machines for a couple years and sell them off as if they're new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, obviously, we'd love to know if that's happening. But they also get
interested in anything they have to tell us, like anything they want to come talk to us about, you know, tell me
more, Fokker. Yeah, I told them they could come do a show, and they seem excited about that. They want to interact with the Monero community. So I was like, yeah, you know, by all means, come, you know, have you on Monerotopia. People could ask you questions. They seemed interested. We'll see what happens, what comes of it. And they also were just saying, kind of like, they kept saying, well, how can we help Monero? They see that Monero is getting delisted from exchanges. And they were asking me, like, what can they do to help Monero? Because they see that as, you know, an attack on Monero, which I thought was interesting.
That's cool. That's interesting. So they're literally just making a product, and that was pretty much it. And it just turns out that... Oh, sorry, Bonnie, go ahead.
I definitely believe in the free market, and if they want to make a product and put that product out there, you know, that's cool. I have a very significant suspicion of those guys and who they're connected to, and their reputation, like Tux mentioned, for developing an ASIC and then doing extensive testing on it to make sure, absolutely sure. It's been working for months now, even for a year, and now we'll sell it to you. We just want to make sure it's the highest quality product. I would just very much caution anyone in the Monero community that would be thinking about parting with their hard-earned Monero to buy one of these machines, because most likely they're selling you something that they've already used extensively. And by the way, just buy like a very, if you're really interested in that, just buy a highly capable processor. Now you've got a nice desktop computer, and then dedicate a number of those CPUs to mining. And in the meantime, you know, you've just got a really, really capable computer that you can use for all kinds of stuff. So that would be my spiel on those guys. But, you know, I mean, I'm interested. I'm always curious to hear what people have to say, even if I am suspicious of them. I really do like to communicate with them.
Can I ask you, who do you think is behind them? Or is that a conversation we should have on the side?
Oh, no, I mean, I guess maybe we could have that conversation another day. It's not like we really need to have it on the side or anything. I just, you know, they've been around for a very long time. I think that they're probably related to, maybe not at this point anymore, maybe the executive, the C-level management has been changed out. But at some level, at some point, I think they were probably related to the centralization of Bitcoin and were probably part of those, like, I mean, it's very, very centralized. There's the estimates are something like 0.1% of entities hold, or sorry, 1% of the entities might hold like 80% of all the Bitcoin. Like, not just like addresses, but like when you do all the adjustments for exchange held Bitcoin, there was a massive centralization that happened and they were a big part of that and they needed a way to sell that. And how did that happen? Well, the exchange complex that we see out there. So while I don't have any specific like allegations I would make at anyone, you know, I do think in the back of my head, like, okay, that seems too easy. That seems too connected. Something's going on in the background there. I don't know what, but that just seems like too easy action to make. So that's all I would really say about that.
Interesting. Well, we'll let them into the tent. Yeah,
I don't see where
not. Cool. Body, you want to go ahead and do a price report?
Sure. Yeah, let's take a look at price. Only an hour in.
We're only an hour in. I'm sure this is going to be a marathon. Is Recon man? Do we know when he's coming on?
He's in the backstage. Oh,
he's waiting.
Yeah, we can pull him on after.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, so price report. Okay. Very cool. Yeah, go ahead. Do your thing.
All right. Roll credits. What?
The Monerotopia Price Report segment is sponsored by Local Monero. Avoid using KYC exchanges. Buy and sell Monero directly for fiat, peer-to-peer.
Hey. All right, so we got price. Technically, this isn't price, it's hash rate. But since we were just talking about the Monero miners, hey, why not start here? So our hash rate is not looking super impressive. So I don't know. Maybe we have to take a little bit of a suspicious eye towards any alleged Bitmain miner developments. Come on, Bitmain, get on the ball. Like, why have we been dropping in hash rate? If y'all could test a little bit more, do some more hardcore testing of your latest mining units, please, if you don't mind. Just playing.
I'll ask them tomorrow. I'll DM them.
Yeah, when new rig, bro. But yeah, it looks like we're kind of been dropping off on the hash rate just a little bit, which is interesting. That kind of slightly resembles the price. Maybe at some point I should try and pull this data. I don't think I can get a CSV of this data, but I bet you I could put an AI on it to look at, like to rip the data off the screen or whatever they call it. So yeah, anyways, that's our hash rate. Turn on your miners, bros. I know the winter's over, so maybe that's part of it, right? Could be some of this drop-off could be the end of winter, and so a few people that would otherwise be needing the heat are turning off their hashing. I don't know. That's what the mining looks like. Here's our transactions. We're kind of doing this oscillation thing now at this point. So that was the quote-unquote attack. I'm going to call it a white hat attack. And then we're kind of doing a little bit more oscillation here. We're up to 50K. I have to assume that, you know, the real transaction, the organic transaction, absent the quote-unquote attack, is probably right around 25,000. That seems like right about what we were doing before things started taking off. So, I mean, again, I don't really see this as a big problem. We were hoping for people to use the network. We would love if there's 100,000, half a million organic transactions on Monero. If anything, this is just free testing, right? It's a free opportunity for us to look at what kind of problems might be out there, and we found some. So, and also the miners, you know, everyone out there doing the hash rate thing, they're, you know, people are going to get paid out a little bit extra for that. So going on to price, last week we kind of drew these lines right here, a little bit, you know, kind of ad hoc looking at this thing. And we kind of broke down from that, the whole crypto market, actually, after we got off the horn. In fact, I think like
it's hilarious. It was literally like half an hour after we ended.
Yeah.
They like, jumped another 5-10%.
I don't know if it was Alaska taking profits, but he got off
Monerotopia and then just smash the sell button. I don't know. Bro, you got to warn us before you do that. No, I'm just kidding. So yeah, we kind of had that crash down there. But overall, I mean, we're still kind of just sideways. I don't like breaking technical patterns to the downside. This is a pretty short-term pattern. It's really only as of the past couple months, you would call it a sideways triangle. I especially feel not confident when drawing technical analysis patterns for Monero price in particular, just because they break so easily. I just don't necessarily trust them. And of course, you know, we've got Anon Mon that also especially doesn't trust drawing pleb lines either. So, you know, shout out to you, bro. Like you are right in the sense that you do need to be very careful about just drawing a line on a chart and saying, oh, well, it has to obey this. Like basically all pleb lines were meant to get broken at some point. And it only works sometimes. So it's only part of the picture. At any rate, we kind of dropped down to the 100 range here for a brief moment. If the rest of the crypto market pulls back, I'd love to tell you that Monero is going to hang on and probably it will hang on to a better extent than other stuff, but it could still have some problems. Take a look at the ratio of Monero and Bitcoin. We're on the weekly chart here, so this is a little bit of a larger view. You know, I have the statistics turned on. We'll just mute that for a little bit. We're not at all-time lows, but man, I got to say, it's not fun to be down here. Got to cover it. You know, it is part of price, so it is what it is. We are way down here. And in a technical sense, in the way that I usually see the standard deviation bands play out, I really feel like the way that price just crashed down here, that doesn't give me the warm, fuzzy feeling of organic action. Sorry about that. Let's get back to the chart. There we go. That doesn't give me the warm, fuzzy feeling of organic action. It feels somewhat artificially induced. That's no surprise for anyone that follows crypto markets. Pretty much everyone here knows that there is some level of artificial induction happening in price markets. So again, we're still on this kind of bottoming pattern. It really does look like a bottoming pattern relative to Bitcoin. So this would be accumulation zone. This is where you would want to be purchasing your Monero. And really, that would be true even if we think there's another upleg for the broader markets. If there's another upleg, the cabal is going to want to find a way to sort of suppress Monero's price. And so while everything is pulling back and some people are probably panic selling and degen swing trading and whatnot, there, you know, if you're the cabal that's going to try and control the Monero price and you know that there's another upleg that you're going to hopefully induce in the rest of crypto, you're going to try and acquire a little bit of Monero when things are calm, when things are quiet. So this, again, this could be a bottoming pattern. I say it doesn't matter, right? Like, just keep buying, right? If you keep spending, keep using Monero, and then keep replenishing your bags. If you're a degen trader, roll those profits into Monero. Down in the 100 range, I mean, when Monero's price is at these levels here in the 100 to 110 range, like, to me, that's just a really good opportunity to replenish your bags if you spend Monero. So I'm the kind of guy that's basically always selling crypto. So... and I don't like to sell anything else other than Monero. So it means that I have to replenish my bags. So selling as I need cash and then rebuying down here, I think is a great way to play that if you're dependent on crypto and degen trading for your livelihood. I don't know how many in the audience would be that, but, yeah, just FYI. So I thought we could also look at the Monero versus gold ratio today, just because maybe that's a slightly interesting chart. So we are also here on the weekly. And you'll notice it basically kind of resembles the XMR USD chart, very similar, but with some interesting deviations here. So one of the things that I noticed pulling up this chart was that we're at these lower term standard deviation lines, the orange bands down here. Again, I colloquially call this wave magic, which I showed a friend this script, and that's what he called it. And I was like, that's good nomenclature, bro. I'm going to steal that. So yeah, we're sitting here at the lower standard deviation bands, very long-term standard deviation bands. You'll see that these have been forming since 2020, right? Since down here, really actually 2019. So, and this again is Monero relative to gold. This would probably be, again, some kind of bottoming pattern. Hopefully, again, it's probabilistic in nature. You really have to wait and see how things unfold. Typically what you'll see is some kind of bottoming. And even if it's going to go down farther, you'll see some rebound before it actually does that. One thing that I was telling you guys, if like maybe 2 weeks ago, or maybe it's like 4 weeks ago now, if we turn on the wave magic for Monero US dollar, I didn't like the way
I really don't like the way that this is unfolding here on Monero US dollar. Like, in a technical sense, I don't like it. Right. So basically, we collapse below these very long term lower standard deviation bands. And then we're basically down here. And you can already see that those lower standard deviation bands are curling under. That is just like very classic action that I see from stuff that that tends to go down. So, I mean, I'm not predicting that Monero goes down because, like I told you guys last week or on Saturday, I do have an emotional block when it comes to Monero. And, you know, I do know that these charts, this doesn't always play out in the way that the chart might suggest or the technical analysis might suggest. So it's totally possible this thing could just break to the upside. That could happen. So I want to believe that will happen, which is a reason I don't trade Monero. I just know that there's too much emotion there that can get in the way. I use Monero and I roll profits into Monero, but I mostly avoid trading it. But from a Wave Magic perspective, I don't like the way that this is unfolding. Just FYI, right? I'm just telling you guys what I'm seeing out here. That would be the Monero US dollar price, but versus gold, this actually does look like you would expect some kind of pause at a minimum. Monero's price relative to gold is falling, but should pause here at some point and could probably rebound. But gold is on a tear. We'll talk about that in a second. But gold just continues to rise, and I think we should continue to expect it to rise until it gets to some like clear areas. So Bitcoin, probably everybody knows, anyone that cares about Bitcoin's price, crypto prices, knows that, oh my God, everything crashed like 17%, the horrible 17%. This was another pattern that we kind of drew ad hoc on Saturday and said, man, I don't really know exactly where this thing is going to go. Like, it looks like a pennant, which normally I think you would say is bullish. But anyways, this thing broke down from that. So I think the markets are suspicious right now. I think there's a lot of suspicion about how much further things can go. There's probably a good chance that people have some kind of PTSD from 2021, as well they should, because a lot of people got screwed at the top of the market. There's kind of one thing out here that's on the horizon. I believe it's going to be launched by 420. It's called Runes. And I don't want to be shilling on accident, right? That's something that one of the shitcoin extraordinaires out there taught me, is that when you tell people Project X is a scam, people will be like, oh, let me go look at Project X. Well, this is interesting. And then they buy Project X and you just basically gave them free advertisement. So nevertheless, at the risk of doing that, this project called Runes is currently on Bitcoin testnet. And it's basically a way to do, I think it's like a standard, and I don't know much about it, so I'm probably going to totally screw this up. But it seems like it's some kind of BRC20 standard that relates into Witness. And you can create all kinds of degeneracy, and people are really excited about it. And they're on testnet. And in fact, there's like testnet coins. They're literally Bitcoin testnet coins now trading at value, if you can believe that crazy shit. Like, to the point that Jameson Lopp was mining empty blocks on testnet to try and slow them down. I'm sorry. That's so many forms of irony. It's too much to take, honestly. One of the things that's going to happen here on 420 is that when the halving happens, these rare sats, quote unquote rare sats, which it's like an arbitrarily defined thing, but it doesn't matter because everyone believes it, or at least all the meme degens believe it. So effectively, a rare sat is the first sat of like a special event. So the halving, the very first block, the very first sat mined would be a rare sat, and that would actually be a legendary sat. The mythical sat was the original one mined by Satoshi. Every difficulty adjustment, the first block after every difficulty adjustment, is also a rare sat. So they've got like this distinction, and rare sats get attached to ordinals. So what's going to happen here, this Runes thing is going to be released. There seems to be so much like hype, degeneracy, excitement from all of the inscriptors that the first block is probably going to go for a massive, massive premium that we'll never know about, but some backroom deal is going to be made with some miners if they can get their hands on it, right? They're going to try and get it, but the mining in Bitcoin is heavily centralized, and there's a lot of different pools that seem to be operated by effectively the same entity. So something like 50% or more of Bitcoin.
That is hilarious to think about, that all these massive centralized pools are going to compete to fight each other to get the rare sat.
Yeah. I mean, it's a big monetary deal for them. Like, you have to believe that those guys are going to act in their best profit interest, right? They love the degeneracy. So, yeah, that's it is what it is. But, you know, in terms of price analysis,
I got to think that that's going to contribute to something, right? That's going to count for something. You're going to get all of this degeneracy with the runes and the first block, the rare sat. They're already trading real value on Bitcoin testnet. That's gotta count for price in some kind of way here. So maybe that even counts for Bitcoin, for the Bitcoin dominance, right? So we could pull the dominance chart up here. And yeah, dominance has been doing good, had that big spike. Really, as we were talking on Saturday, Bitcoin dominance was spiking. And then right after, it's come back down a little bit. But overall, like this chart, I mean, just from the Wave Magic standpoint, you would say, hey, this chart is slowly but steadily up and up and up. So yeah, I mean, I would just keep that in your mind if you're, I mean, hell, if you can afford the fees on Bitcoin, because we could very well see 100, 500 sats, 1,000 sats per V-byte. That could happen if this thing is like really, really taking off. So yeah, that's that's happening out there. What is it? So 420 is just like 2 days away. So the halving is very close. Yeah, so it wouldn't be surprising to see like a very quick reversal on this chart, even though the pleb lines got broken, which actually I think that was kind of the reason we talked about these pleb lines on Saturday, is because we said, hey, you know, just be careful with pleb lines. You really want to try and get a confirmation. So we're on the daily candles now. You want to get above the line, and then you want to actually confirm a second day close above the line. In this case, you did this like weird oscillation thing and then broke down. And that's why it's like, it's good to sort of do that confirmation thing in your head. Say, let me wait. I'm not just going to jump in. Let's get a 1-2 day confirmation that the thing actually broke the line, and then go for a swing trade. So yeah, that should be fun. This good time should be had by all on Twitter. I'm watching this unfold. There will be a lot of salt. There will be a lot of crying harder. Hopefully at multiple sides, so that we can maximize the wools. Oh, crypto Z scores. Let's take a look. Is there anything standing out to us? I don't see anything pumping at the moment. One thing I've noticed is that LINK will tend to pump. Like, if there's going to be a major move, I'll see LINK pumping to the upside very often. I haven't been able to figure out exactly what that is. I try to construct something in my brain where I was like, okay, LINK is a cross-chain facilitator of all kinds of degeneracy, so maybe you need to move through LINK. If you're like a big market maker, you need to move through LINK to sort of push the price on the coins that you want, so LINK pumps first. That's a very tentative kind of idea, and LINK pumping ahead of everything else is also, you know, it's only half true at best. So let's take a look at some of the YouTube comments. Is there anything good out there that I'm missing here? Hash rate job. Monero is no longer the most profitable network to mine for CPUs. You know, Edward, that's, I can believe that. And you know, the reason that I can believe that, let's go to some of these, let's go to Pirate Chain as one good example. Pirate Chain has pumped 145% in the past 3 weeks. So, one thing that hasn't been lost on me here, and I can't remember, I think we chatted about this last week on Saturday, but one thing that we see is just absolute shitcoins that are not used for anything. Like, Monero has real organic actual usage in important markets that matter, and other coins that have fucking nothing, they'll pump 100%, 200% for no reason, but Monero just doesn't have that at all. So it's like, why? What is different here? Why does
Monero? I mean, to be fair, right around that time, Pirate Chain got like a big hard fork, a big upgrade.
Okay. Yeah. That could explain it. But, you know, Pirate Chain is just one example, right? We could pull up almost any random coin here and find, you know, within the last few months, in the last 6 to 12 months, find some major like 100% pump that it made in a very short time frame. I just think it's interesting. You know, I think it's just worth pointing out, saying that, you know, Monero never gets that kind of pump action anymore. Not that I'm saying, oh God, why don't we get our pump action? It's more, it's not that like I'm crying harder about Monero not pumping sufficiently for my bags. It's about, why doesn't it do that? What's different? What's going on here? Maybe that's related to the exchange delistings. And maybe that says something about the insiders, in the crypto market, and how connected they may or may not be to governments, or under duress they may or may not be, as related to governments. Just, you know, something interesting to think about. Okay, let's take a look at the Tether and USDC market caps. Tether continues to rise significantly in terms of its market cap, pushing $110 billion at this point. USDC kind of recovering, still not at the heights of its heyday back in 2022. One thing that you should note here on this chart, though, is that even after the top was in, in 2021, Tether and USDC continued to pump to the upside. So my guess is that this chart in many ways is probably used as one of many in a fabric of
of sentiment generation, right? These charts, the market cap of Tether and USDC are probably used somewhat to help people feel comfortable that more gains are on the way. They're like, oh, well, look, Tether printed another billion, so that must mean more gains, right? And that's going to be true until the day that it's not, right? Because they're going to keep trying to make it look like, even when the top is in, they're still going to try and make you think that, oh, it's just a dip, right? Keep buying, we have more bags to unload. So, but it's a valuable, worthwhile chart to take a look at. Again, you're keeping these little pieces in your brain. You kind of want to like keep all of it together as sort of this nebulous cloud, play with the ideas, let them, it's like cloud gazing. You see a face, you let it take shape. You start to see common themes. You hope that as this like aggregated mass of information that's churning around in your brain, that you start to be able to make some sense out of it, which is kind of why I think you want to look across a broad spectrum of things, whether that's hype, the legal situation going on, technical analysis, etc. So let's take a quick look at macro and then we'll call it a day. So gold, we'll start with gold because probably people here own gold. I mean, of course you guys own gold. It's gold backs for sure, 100%. We're sitting here at about $2,400, a little bit of a slowdown as of the past week here in the gold price. This looks slightly like, consolidation topping, whatever. I still think probably if we go to the weekly, you don't really see too much of a slowdown. I mean, this thing is just taking off like to the upside, 20%. Buckle up. Is what Peter Schiff likes to say when gold moves 5%. But at any rate, yeah, I tend to think gold should still keep moving. I have some more ideas on gold that I'll share with you guys maybe like in a month or so. It basically gold goes up before like a big tail risk event happens, like a big crash will happen. You'll see gold already moving up and then gold will crash with the market and then it'll continue going up for a short period of time. But we'll talk about that if we get like if the signs start showing more likelihood of tail risk. Okay, this is now the dollar index. As we talked about, this thing still looks pretty bullish at this point. I would expect, again, expecting to make the upper standard deviation area somewhere around there. So Dixie still to the upside, I would say, most likely. Reverse repos have kind of leveled out here. So you'll notice that for a period of time since, really basically since March 1st, has been overall flat, a little bit up, a little bit down, but the reverse repos, which is money parked at the Federal Reserve, where you get the overnight federal funds rate, so that's money not in risk assets, not in stocks, not in crypto, just sitting at the Federal Reserve. This is money that could hypothetically go seek higher yield in a risk-on environment. But that money, we haven't seen any new money come out of the reverse repos, and I think, surprise, surprise, that seems to be correlated here with a little bit of a pullback in the stock market. This is the S&P 500. So one thing I did to kind of like prove to myself that the reverse repos actually do have some correlation here, we will go to the correlation coefficient, and then you can type your symbol in right here. This is actually RRPON. I don't know why it's RRPON, but it is. So we'll apply that. In terms of the correlation coefficient, I always like to, I prefer the style to be histogram. I think it just looks better that way. Doesn't matter. Maybe we'll make that a brighter color. Hopefully we'll just make it white and we'll make the line thicker. Sorry, kind of like slowing down here. We'll make the link 30 days. But basically what you can see here is that indeed there has been a pretty significant negative correlation since the top of the market, since the 2021 peak, and things started coming down. Basically, you'll see the zero point is right here. And the reverse repos have been inversely correlated with the stock market. So as the inverse repos go down, the stock market goes up. There's a few periods here where the correlation goes to the opposite side, but overall, you would say that this is definitely a bias that we're seeing, kind of like in real time, I guess, over the months, over the years now here. So again, this is kind of why I just think the reverse repos is a big piece of the puzzle in our minds that we need to keep track of. Currently, it's flattening out a little bit. Again, my guess is that they're probably trying to save some firepower for the elections so that everyone can feel good that Biden has taken care of the stock market and they got inflation under control. Praise Jay Powell. My God, they're just our saviors from the inflation. And also the conflict somehow. let's see. Okay, bonds, and this is it. So we got bonds here. They've actually been rising. If you're the kind of person that wants like simple, stable yield, now's the time to probably buy yourself a long-term bond. It really is. Like, you are not going to get much better rates here to find yourself a 1 to 5 year bond that'll give you a guaranteed 4.5 to 5% interest. One thing that I think is interesting here is these red lines. This is the overall inversion, as we've talked about before. I take every single one of these bonds and subtract them from every single other one of the bonds. At least, let me rephrase that. I take every short-term bond and subtract it from every longer-term bond to get the inversion, the overall inversion of this entire mess of lines. What you get down here is a couple red lines. Don't worry, either way, there's two of them. There are two of them. But effectively, the yield curve is still inverted overall, but it's moving towards the upside. To me, this looks like a yield curve that at some point here, maybe in the next year, is probably going to move itself into the positive territory. And that, for us, is a signal of tail risk increasing. So whenever we get to that point, we'll talk more about it. But yeah, bonds, nothing happening there. And I think that's good enough for today. We've got a big show here for the birthday party. I'll hand it back over to you, gentlemen.
All right, man. Do you remember when Monero hit 420 on 420? That was like the most epic day ever in my entire life. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Is this really happening right now?
I think that was before my time.
This is, 2-3 years ago? When was the last?
It was, I guess it was 2021. Let's go back to it. Take a second to pull the charts back there. But
And the fact that that still didn't get Elon's attention, I was like, well, what? This makes no sense.
Yeah, like, it's bro, like, you like drugs? Come on.
Right. Like that's his favorite number, 420. Monero hit 420.69 on 420. and no input from Elon whatsoever.
Maybe. We would never know, would we?
Maybe it was.
Let's see. Right here. This is the candle. Let's crap. I'm gonna make. Yeah,
I was like in disbelief when that happened. It's like, this is not happening right now.
I mean, you know, somebody had to be like some whale out there.
I'm sitting there smoking weed on 420, looking at Monero's price at 420. I was like, what? What just happened? Did I die? I'm no longer here.
I don't even smoke weed, and I was like, dude, we just hit 420, and I like seriously lit up fucking joint. It's like, I'm gonna do it. That's not even my choice at this point.
All right, guys, can we do it? What do we have? We have 2 days. Let's make it happen. That should be the we should all be on Twitter trying to get Elon to pump Monero for 420. Make it happen again. Bring it back.
Let's at least get 420 live viewers today.
Four.
So far, all we have is 69. I don't know. Looks like 30.
Or we can dump Monero and have it go down to $4.20.
But what it legit hit it on 420 though, right?
This is the Monero chart right here. You can see on the bottom Tuesday, on April 20th, we hit, this is the 4-hour chart. So right here, 1620.
What time is that?
Right here. So in UTC time, technically that was like right at the end of the day, UTC time, but it was still 420, like in the evening time for America.
Yeah. And obviously, I was very much smoking weed and looking at the price of Monero. It was one of my more memorable moments.
Yeah, it was, let's just like super zoom in on this. It was this candle right here.
Yeah,
see,
yeah.
We just barely touched it.
420.69 on 420.
You could Chad that did the
nobody could take that away from us, guys. Like, on top of all the cool, like, all the badass things Monero is known for, it's also the only coin to hit 420 on 420. Add that to the list.
I was surprised at how little attention that got. Like, we saw it, but I guess
I know that's what I'm saying. And yeah, this is when Elon was like pumping Doge, and he is like Mr. He's always making the 420.69 jokes, and then literally on 420. I think I even like tweeted him that day to try, like, with the hopes that something would happen, but that was nothing. Yeah, it didn't get much attention considering the odds of it happening.
I wasn't on Twitter at that point.
Oh wow, you weren't even on Twitter at that point.
You're responsible for that.
That long.
You made that.
Oh, shit. It's been great. No, I think everybody loves it.
It was actually a very good transition to make from Reddit. My Reddit time was more so me kind of like sort of half open journaling, gathering thoughts, trying to learn about stuff, debate long form with people to try and understand what's going on, see if like, can people bring different arguments, different perspectives. You know, I was on like Butcoin, I was on the cryptocurrency subreddit, obviously I was in Monero. I was just like trying to get as many perspectives as possible, and then like chat, debate with people to really form as many ideas as I could. And then you convinced me to get on Twitter. So ever since, it's just been one.
Yeah, I discovered you on the Monero trading subreddit, right? What is this? I've been on.
Yeah, XMR Trader.
Is that still like active? Are people still?
There's
there's like maybe about a handful of people, like I'd say probably 10 people that are on the XMR Trader subreddit. And a lot of those guys, like some of those guys, like Monero Fox, for example, was a big part of us understanding, finding the data to indicate what Binance was doing with their fractional reserve scheme. He was, I'm pretty sure it was Monero Fox that like regularly, almost every day, would post the volume in relation to the order book. And he would also post the rates that Binance would give you for loaning them Monero. And it was always really high. Like you could see they were always trying to get people to loan them Monero. And you could see the divergence between Monero's behavior and like every other coin, like every other proof of work coin, every other coin with a competing use case or a use case that would hypothetically compete with Monero. And you could just see like it was just night and day. Like that. And it was every time that we turned over another stone, another little piece of data to look like another piece of data to look at. It was just the same story. It always kept pointing the same direction. So, some of those guys were really instrumental in helping us put this puzzle together.
I didn't see much around the everybody pulled their Monero off the exchanges thing, right? Like, wasn't that part of Monero's birthday in years past?
We didn't. On Binance. Yeah, the money run,
Okay.
I can never pronounce it like I wanted to. The money run. It was. I didn't really have much to do with it. Some other guys organized. Hey, let's all test Binance reserves and pull our Monero off on Monero's birthday, 4/18, and that was 2022. And we crushed them. Like we crushed them and all the exchanges. They kept shutting down. Like the weeks leading into this event, they kept shutting down their withdrawals. They couldn't stay open. Monero's price spiked up. Like everything. So that was really cool that year. It was like the smoking gun for us. It was like after we did that, after we tested their reserves, we organized like just a ragtag team of us tested Binance's reserves and the other exchanges. They couldn't keep their withdrawals open. So that was like a smoking gun. Like, yeah, you guys don't actually have it. That's what we thought. We already knew it. Okay. We've tried to organize, I say we, but they've kind of tried to organize some other money runs since then. And it's kind of like, we don't want to look like we're trying to exploit this as a way of, you know, pumping our coin. Like that wasn't the point of it. The point was get your money off the exchange, use Monero like it's supposed to, prove what these guys are doing, get that smoking gun evidence. I was personally kind of opposed to using that as a way to try and pump the price. It was useful for what we needed, and now it's delisted from Binance. So there's not as much of a reason to do it anymore.
That was our GameStop moment.
Yeah, the Moaz.
Very cool, man. Buddy, stick around if you can.
Yeah, I'll be here.
We'll be singing happy birthday to Monero soon. So
cool.
Please stick around.
All righty.
Tux.
Thanks as always, buddy.
Yeah, thanks as always, Tux. What do you want to move on to news? What do you? Bring up the guests, right? Let's bring on, man.
Let's do it.
The Monerotopia guest segment is sponsored by CakeWallet. Store, send, receive, and exchange your Monero and Bitcoin safely on iOS and Android too. CakeWallet is open source, and you always control your own keys.
Recon, man. How's it going?
Going pretty well. How's it going? Do you?
Good, good. In a good mood. It's Monero's birthday. We're having a good show here. Yeah, how you feeling about Monero on its birthday?
Well, I don't follow the price too much, but it's certainly still as usable as it was before, and it's still a very useful tool to me. And I think that looking at the new decentralized exchange, Heveno, I think it's pronounced, I was testing that out, and it seemed to be pretty good.
Now, is that live yet, or it's still like testnet?
I think they're testing on the mainnet now.
Testing it.
So just as like a final beta.
Okay. Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, I'm very excited about that. It was nice. You used it. It was slick. It worked.
Yeah, it was. I've never used a decentralized exchange. So this was my first time, and it was a good experience. Pretty simple to set up and use.
Yeah, hopefully we see that grab a lot of traction. It could become an important on and off ramp for Monero. We've been talking about Sarai quite a bit. But Heveno, another very exciting project that's going to be a new avenue into and out of Monero.
Definitely.
So I wanted to bring you on today or somebody that's part of the Monero Con organization effort. We're getting excited. We're getting close here. It's not that far away anymore.
Another couple of months.
Yeah, like not even two months, right? Because it's, what is the date? June
6th to 9th. So
yeah, less than 2 months away.
48 days.
Yeah. Awesome. So yeah, give us the update. What's going on with MoneroCon?
Well, we have our draft schedule. It's still subject to change. We have a lot of talks going on and some workshops. We also have our hackathon that's going on. So I'll post the link right here. But we the hackathon, we're getting people to sign up and there are prizes. It's our first time this year winning the hackathon, a hackathon during MoneroCon. So it's going to be something interesting. It's 48 hours. You get a free ticket. And yeah, it's going to be pretty nice. And then...
Yeah, let's... Tux, bring up the site if you can.
Yeah, let me see.
Very cool. Yeah, hackathon. Very excited about that. We're going to try to do that at Monerotopia as well. Luke, when he was at Monerotopia, was walking around saying, we got to do a hackathon next time. Love to see that MoneroCon is doing it. I'm sure MoneroCon is going to do it right. And then I think you have like the Ethereum conference taking place at the same time, right? So maybe you can get some of those people to come on over, right?
Yeah, hopefully we'll see. Certainly going to be interesting.
Now, is there any thought as to what the hackathon is going to be focused on, or is it going to kind of be like open to whatever people can build and, you know, made the best project win?
I'll just read directly what the hackathon site says. Build any app or improve upon code related directly or indirectly to the Monero core code base or the greater Monero ecosystem. So any integrations contributing to like the Monero core itself or demos, POCs, and these things.
Very cool. Very cool. That's very exciting. Tell us more about it. So hackathon, which is going to be amazing. I can't wait to like see what comes out of that. You know, something magical will come out of that.
Yeah, there are people that are will definitely work very, very hard in those 48 hours.
Yeah, and we'll definitely going to try to copy you guys there and do it at Monerotopia as well. Because what's cool is you'll have all these different projects too, right?
Right.
Different privacy tech projects that can work together and come up with something. It's gonna be. I see Amir Taki on there. He's known to have created a thing or two at a hackathon in years past. I think it was Dark Wallet, it was called at the time, came out of a hackathon. Or Dark Coin, I remember, something that Amir had come up with, worked on at a hackathon. A lot of brain power there, so that should be awesome. I'm sure Luke will be participating as well.
Yeah, hopefully we'll see a wide range of projects. Just to celebrate the Monero, like its 10th birthday, 20 tickets are 20% off today or for the next couple of days. So let me send the link for the, there's a code to use. I think it's just 10 year. If you do that while you're buying your ticket, you'll get 20% off. So if you should definitely check it out, it'll be very, very fun.
Awesome. Are we going to give away a ticket today, a ticket or two?
I don't think so. I can talk to one of the organizers and see if we can do that soon.
Okay, no worries. I wasn't sure if that was happening today. We will be announcing the cake wallet prize though, right, Tux? At some point during the show for those who are tuning in.
That is correct.
Yes. You can still enter to win that. All you have to do is retweet that tweet with your Monero screenshot.
Or comment, yep.
Yeah, or comment. So recap, man. Tell us more, man. So we got hackathon, we got the talks, speakers, paint the picture.
Well, so we do have some pictures of the venue. I don't have any pictures of the venue publicly, but we do have a floor map that we will release very soon. All the talks will be on the main stage, and then all the workshops will be in a separate place. We're looking to get as many people, like locals around, to come in and explore and try out. And we're also just looking to get some people that are directly involved with Monero to come and talk with us and present themselves. But I think what's really important that I think Monerotopia did as well was to just encourage the local people to come and just explore and see what Monero is, just cryptocurrency in general. Was really, really important.
I'm just interrupting for a second. We have Joel saying, hey, everyone, cheers to 10 years. Privacy is normal. Fiat's a scam. Live on crypto before it's too late. Definitely, man. Joel, jump up on stage if you can. We'd love to hear from you. Joel is famous for kind of being one of the first to really try to live off crypto in a public way and broadcasting his experiences with it very early to crypto. And is a how do I do that? We'll put the link, Tux, or I'll do it right now. I'll drop the link in there, Joel, and you can jump up. You'll be backstage, and then we'll bring you up when we're done talking to Recon Man. Go ahead, Recon Man, keep it going. Tell us more.
Yeah, like one important thing I wanted to mention about the talks is that Monero, like, there's a lot of technicality involved with the privacy and all the mathematics and these things, but what we have done is just have a bunch of talks of varying levels. So we're going to have levels like difficulty levels, or rather complexity levels, for the talks posted. So for example, there is a talk that will give an introduction to elliptic curve cryptography, which is what's used in Monero. For any skill level, anyone, we're trying to get as many people to come and enjoy and understand. Even if you don't know much about the underlying technology, it's still a great way to understand and learn more about the ecosystem.
100%. Very cool. So you'll be getting noobs involved as well.
Yeah, certainly. To get just new people excited and then just get them to be involved, regardless of how much they know about the underlying technology. I think the workshops are also something that are pretty important. If you bring a laptop, you can just try things out. Look, I'll have a workshop going for the Monero PHP library. So just accept Monero payments, generate Monero addresses and these things from code, which will be pretty interesting.
Cool. You're running that workshop?
Yeah. So 7th of June, 6 p.m. That is on the draft schedule. Of course, it may change.
Very cool. What are some of the other workshops that are taking place?
I'm seeing the DarkFi, Amir, this guy, seems he might be running a workshop as well. Anonymous ecosystems, discussion of topics, and also how to use the actual DarkFi system itself, the cryptocurrency itself. Monero Move also has a very interesting talk on something that Monero Move and Ruckneum have been working on. They've been working on something named TownForge, which is game that works on the Monero, a fork of the Monero blockchain with a few modifications. So
they won't be in person, right? They'll be remote?
I'm not sure. I think they will be remote. I'm not sure, though.
Okay. Because Monero Moo, I don't think, has ever been public, right?
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Look at to understand,
and he's doing that with Ruckneum, right?
Oh no, the talk is just him himself. At least that's what's listed. But Ruckneum has also been developing it and working on.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Yeah. I'm probably they'll both be remote. I know Ruckneum will be remote at Monerotopia as well. But that's awesome. And then Monero Moves. Yeah, you don't hear much about that game, that implementation. That's exciting.
Seems like a side project of mm-hmm. some sort, but I played it and it was pretty fun and interesting, the game. Build houses and these things. I'm not too familiar with these types of games. I think development is going on, but it's more research rather than actual implementation. It's pretty cool. It's pretty interesting.
Very cool. Very cool. Is there anything else you want to leave us with regards to Monerica?
One more iteration on the talks. Like, we don't have talks just about Monero. We have talks about a lot of different technologies. One, which is Simple XChat, which is newer within the past few years, newer messenger application. Doesn't have any user IDs. We have a cryptocurrency named Tari, which is another doing their own research into privacy technologies. We have some generalized talks on the actual math itself. So these are more technical talks. And overall, we just have like so many different avenues of learning that I think are really worth it to come see, even if you are just watching the talks online. So the talks will be streamed online, most likely on YouTube. So you could watch while the talk is going.
Beautiful. Very, very exciting. Hopefully I will be there in person. Really, fingers crossed for me.
but definitely striving to make it. Tux, I'm sure you'll be there, right?
That's right.
I have not missed a MoneroCon yet, so I'm not planning on missing it this year. Seems like it's going to be bigger and better than ever. Very excited for it.
Yeah, I think we're expecting around 250 attendees, 250 to 300 this year. So a bit more than last year.
Beautiful. Very exciting. Recon Man, thank you so much. Appreciate you jumping on, giving us the update. Stick around if you can, and we'll keep moving it along.
Okay, thank you very much.
Also, thanks for coming.
Cheers, man. All righty. Should we move to viewers on stage so we can get Joel up here?
Yeah, let's do that. And then I guess, when should I run the giveaway?
Yeah, once everybody's up on stage, right? We could do that. We could sing a happy birthday to Monero. Like, you know, I'm sure we'll keep it going.
Beautiful a cappella, hopefully.
Do we have Alaska 8 on here? Because that's going to kind of determine if this is another an hour or if it's another 4 hours. All right, so this may not go. We'll see where it goes. Okay.
It's the Viewers on Stage segment. It's that time where we invite you, the viewers, up on stage to comment on anything you've heard so far today, ask the guest a question, or maybe talk about one of the news topics. Come on down.
All righty. What's up, everyone?
What's up?
Yeah, bring them all.
Happy birthday, Monero.
What's up, Shortwave? Joel, what's going on, man? You're I think this is your first time on the live Monerotopia stage. I know we've done Monero talks in the past. I think you've been on your show. But thanks for jumping on today. This is cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Just get some work done, and then I just notice, hey, might as well stop and say hi. 10 years is quite the crypto milestone. I mean, there's very few projects that are still kicking and relevant at this stage that have been there for a while. And on this day that we're like the tech changes so fast, there's a new project every week, it seems. You know, it's kind of important because it's sort of like proving a point, right? Where it's not just like, oh yeah, we can do that. Anyone can make a $10 million scam coin and just, then lose all the money accidentally in a private key accident or whatever. You're gone by the next year. But to just still be around is kind of it's cool. And yeah, I'm very happy that privacy is maybe not front and center this cycle, but I'm starting to see a lot of it under the surface start to bubble up, where I think it'll hit the crypto normies next cycle is my prediction. So a few more years and then this is going to be everything people care about, in my opinion. I could be wrong.
I think I agree with you on that. Yeah, that's my feel right now as well. I am seeing more people coming into the tent, but yeah, it's not in an overwhelming way yet, right? But definitely seeing more people talking about crypto privacy in general.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Doug's channel is a way to check the Monero adoption, because it's got 9.4K subscribers, at least on YouTube. And none of the other Monero-related channels even have close to that. So if you just kind of look at Doug's subscriber numbers, you can kind of tell where the direction of Monero is going.
Yeah. One subscriber equals one USD per coin. So let's get that up there.
That would be nice.
Man.
Joel, give us some of your wisdom, man. You've been around a long time. I was asking Vic for wisdom. Give us some of your insights into crypto, I guess Monero in particular. You've been around probably for the life of Monero, right? I know you got into crypto pretty early. Give us your perspective as you've watched Monero go from zero to what it is today.
Yeah, it's definitely, I was doing some talk on a space earlier about, a lot of like Bitcoin soul searching, where the Bitcoin community might be. And it's very, these things that we have, they're tools for, privacy, sovereignty, all these kinds of things. But they're kind of, for a lot of people, they're kind of a lot more than that. They're, most crypto tokens today, because almost no one uses it, let's be honest, even except for like a few, most of them are a investment in a philosophy. That's kind of it. And the more powerful the idea, the more they kind of, stick around. And a lot of these ideas have been sort of, I think that Monero's got a stronger idea than most cryptos in the space. It's got a more, it's kind of Bitcoin-like in that way, in that like people ascribe a lot of things to, you know, financial sovereignty, you know, resistance against governments and central banking, all that kind of stuff. That kind of got it ascribed to Bitcoin. And then over time, Bitcoin's ethos sort of shifted to more almost like a personal, like almost Tony Robbins-esque, like personal development, get rich, like all this kind of stuff, like a little prosperity gospel-y. There's still a lot of cypherpunk ethos there too. But then like the Monero message has been very clear, and it's kind of a testament to sticking with principles and being very loud about them. And so the other thing I would like to sort of mention on that is in this crazy world with, you know, pumps and everything like that, the Monero of today is nothing like the Monero at peak market capitalization in a good way. Like the actual tech, the user experience. Like, I do remember when I first heard about and started like fiddling around, it was like only a command line wallet, and my Monero was the only way to use it other than that. And it was like the old school version, and like couldn't use it anywhere. The Jax wallet was bitching about not being able to integrate. Like, it was just a mess. It was a disaster. And today it's just like everywhere, kind of. Like, there's so many wallets. There's spending assists and tools. There's like, we're talking about DEX integrations. I just interviewed Luke from SarayDex not too long
ago. Oh, you had him on. Beautiful.
Yeah, it's in the queue of things to publish. But yeah, I mean, we're at a real spot where, unfortunately, the hype's kind of mostly gone, and that makes it more difficult for people to have like money to then reinvest in the project, maybe. But as far as where it's at, as far as tech, as far as adoption, as far as everything, you know, I mean, it's probably all-time high, don't you think?
Oh, 100%, especially with full membership, full chain membership proofs around the corner now. Monero's never been more technologically evolved. And adoption, you know, I think more people are using Monero than ever before, which is obviously something that needs to happen for a cryptocurrency to really have any value at the end of the day. What do you think about the fact that where Monero is falling behind, and that's being listed on centralized exchanges? Obviously, the spin zone of Monerotopia, we label that as a positive, right? Monero is being forced to have to survive with the umbilical cord cut off from the fiat system, forcing it to have to evolve in certain ways, right? With SarayDex, with the evolution of atomic swaps, with Hivino, whatever else needs to happen to allow people to get in and out of Monero, and in a way where they're essentially forced to do without KYC, all those positive things to note. But what's your overall take on the delistings of Monero?
I think I would call it like a cloud with a silver lining. I don't think it's a good thing. I think it has a lot of good after effects, which are you get a lot more impetus, a lot more pushing for decentralized exchanges, for people actually earning it as a crypto, you know, as actual currency, all this kind of stuff. And I think in the end, that was always the way it was going to have to go. And this is just an accelerant. In the short term, you just have to be careful with some of the downsides. I mean, obviously price dip, yeah, but whatever. That's minor. It's a lot of, if you're trying to get a lot of people to use this, then you're going to have a lot of difficulty in some new people getting it. Especially, we're not talking about seasoned pros who can know their way around a dark web or whatever, but like we're talking just the normies that want to, they just maybe care about privacy. They like Bitcoin, but they don't think it's going to work out for them in case banks suspend withdrawals and all that kind of stuff. So they're like, I want to get some Monero. And then, okay, well, where do they get it? Maybe just Kraken? And then Kraken becomes a massive honeypot for all the people to keep tabs on. It's so there's, I don't think that's going to matter like 5 years from now, but it is going to matter this year, next year, you know, just we got to be very careful about how that's approached and make sure we have like a robust fiat on-ramp system.
I hope my sound is coming in all right, but I just wanted to chime in on that. I'm driving to Alaska.
I had a feeling Alaska, yeah. Alaska, I would go for it, buddy.
This is why I tried to stay off the show. It was too interesting. And if I start talking, you know, but here, so in my opinion, what ties into that, and the first thing I thought when you're talking about the most important innovations in Monero recently, So I think, and, you know, Doug, thank you for all of this, because you're the kind of the man behind everything that I'm going to say here. For one, I think, like, dedicated miners, even if it's just CPU tech.
You got cut out.
Oh, we lost him.
I think he's literally driving in Alaska right now. Oh, yeah, here he is.
Yeah,
he lost him for a bit.
My boss keeps calling me, and I keep ignoring him. Yeah. I keep ignoring my boss, but
he was going to pay me to get out anyway. Don't worry about him.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. But here's the thing. I think, for one, the crypto mining thing, even if it's just CPUs in a box, would help a lot with the stabilization of the hash rate. But more importantly, I think the Nodo is super important as something that integrates into the Monero ecosystem. I think, you know, Cake Wallet's been doing all the heavy lifting of people like connecting to nodes and using a wallet and all of that. I think that having the tech that Cake puts out, plus people using it like more like a Feather wallet type of thing, would be unbelievably huge for the usability of Monero at the consumer level. But then where all of that becomes super valuable is with platforms like XMR Bazaar. You know, the circular economy is the Achilles heel of crypto just generally, right? Where the exchanges are always how people get in and out of crypto. But the trick is to just eliminate the need to get in and out of crypto with fiat. And people just start buying and selling directly with fiat. That's always been the holy grail of the whole thing. And like having the Craigslist of crypto and having it first be Monero, while simultaneously, like, you swap in and out on DEXs instead of exchanges and all of that. But then the other thing is, local Monero has become a very usable platform. And now nobody has to worry about it being like a rug pull exit scam, or, you know, there's large data, there's large bodies of like credible, respectable people to get in and out with fiat using local Monero. And I think that Monero is blazing a trail for all cryptocurrencies, for the fact that we have like revolutions in the circular economy. And I think that XMR Bazaar is like right now the most promising thing for people using a circular economy on a larger scale.
It would also appear to me as though local Monero is actually starting to really work well. Because, like, for example, I just went on and looked up some, you know, fiat pairs from payment methods. And, you know, I'm used to seeing, you know, 15-16% upcharge from this centralized exchange price to get Monero on local Monero. Well, now it's down to 8 or 9, and the volumes I'm seeing are a lot higher. Before, I was seeing, you know, you could buy $100 from this person and $200 from this person and $50 from this person. Now I'm seeing things like $2,000 worth or $4,000 worth. Like, I'm seeing a lot more, a lot bigger order book volumes there in local Monero now.
Yeah, that's definitely a big thing. And as I tell people, I can't remember, I don't think I've ever bought any crypto my whole life, these last 11 or so years. It's only been gold backs. Yeah, that's a local New Hampshire reference mostly, but yeah. Basically just been paid in goods and services. And obviously, unfortunately, I'm friends with multiple people who have gone to prison for peer-to-peer crypto sales, one of them being Ian Freeman, the other being Mark Hopkins or Dr. Bitcoin. And there's always, it's very tricky depending on where you're at, what jurisdiction, and the government's never going to be very nice to tell you, well, this is what you can do to stay out of jail. They're not very good with that, unfortunately. So I would try not to, like, it's great, build up those ramps, but try to do your best to earn directly so there's no fiat involved. And you'll sell, advertise whatever you sell, say, I'll take this. Anyone who you'll pay, even if they go out of your way, pay them in Monero, and just keep that thing flowing. And that's kind of the real thing, where then it's always the choke points. It's always the honeypots. It's always that's where they get you. And to just be peer-to-peer digital cash is where you don't really have those.
Well, you know, exactly. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that I may or may not purchase more Monero each time I buy it in order to save Monero and start having accumulating a stash of Monero to have an emergency fund of Monero for if I need it for a couple of months or something like that. I may or may not have that.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why I was saying about like the fiat on and off ramps and XMR blazing a trail for everybody else, because it's simply put, the weak point of crypto, it's not, you know, Monero's ring signatures. It's not even like Bitcoin's ridiculous fees and all of that. It's when people get in and out of the fiat economy, that's where the government always gets you. That's where the prison industrial complex meets the freedom loving free market entrepreneur. And to me, it cannot be overstated how important it is for us to just stop doing the on off ramp thing, right? It's like, I mean, you know, like you said, the honeypots, the logging, the, you know, tracking your economic activity, all of it. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize the data mining and the learning algorithms that have come out lately, like how that plays into getting away from these on and off ramps as well, because it's never been more important to keep your financial activities to yourself.
And the funny thing is now AI is very advanced. Just now, Llama 3 got released and its parameters is like crazy. But yeah, right now, it's interesting times we are living in. We have to make sure we have good DEXs and fully atomic swap DEXs, as well as peer-to-peer trading escrow system. The more trading we have with cash or gold, I think with privacy coin, we will win.
Alaska now brought up XMR Bazaar. We are very close to launching it. We spoke about it last show. Anybody wants to help test, just jump into the XMR Bazaar chat room.
It looks really, really good.
Yeah, you gave it a run. You checked it out, right?
Oh yeah, I've been checking it out, and I really, really like the dark mode that BT Dev has done. And I've tried with the restoring, you know, the private message keys, and that works well. And there's a couple of little things, but overall, it's really good.
Have you tested out the multi-sig escrow yet?
I haven't done any transactions yet. Okay. I plan on it. I just haven't gotten around to it yet.
Yeah, we need to get people helping us test out with that. So please jump into that chat. Tux, if you could throw the link of the chat in there. People are testing out right now, giving us feedback. I will send you some Monero tips if you guys throw us some good feedback. Happy to do that. Yeah, very excited about it, and I'll stop shilling that. But it is an important project. This is how we win, guys. Right? We talk about the circular economy, Joel. I always hear you talking about it, but it only happens if we actually all start actively doing it. And we need to build the platforms that we need for those purposes.
Absolutely. I'm hoping
XMR Bazaar could help fulfill that role. We tried Open Bazaar in the past, and I think it was too early. And you know, given Bitcoin's tech and where Bitcoin ended up, you know, heading towards, for whatever reason, it wasn't the right time, didn't work. We need some good clear net peer to peer marketplaces, trustless peer to peer marketplaces.
Lord, I wish Open Bazaar would have worked.
Well, speaking of which, I don't know if this is a shill because it's not my project, but a good friend of mine, Chris Pacio, is the lead back at Open, developer for Open Bazaar. And I just got him. We were just in Amsterdam this last weekend speaking at ETHDAM, which their whole slogan for that that thing was privacy is normal. So privacy is the theme of that conference, probably getting rebranded for next year. But Chris is working on his own crypto right now called Ilium, which is basically a privacy forward, zero knowledge based crypto that's doing smart contracts and tokenized assets and stuff like that too. And a lot of it sounds like buzzword salad, but based on knowing this guy, his work is very, very solid. And I don't know, just check it out, see what you can learn from it. I think it might launch at the end of the year, but just
what is this?
You said,
what is it called?
Ilium, Illium. And it looks, I mean, people a lot smarter than me have said it looks really cool so far in the way he's been able to make it happen. So maybe just check it out by the end of the year whenever it comes out. I just know that Chris is obviously a very talented dev because of the whole Open Bazaar stuff. And maybe he'll even start to build a marketplace or do something like that, or he could help out with something else on the side.
Yeah, I thought they were trying to do like an Open Bazaar 2.0 thing. Wasn't there something being worked on, or that never happened?
I think they were trying to resurrect it, but it just, my personal opinion, I'll probably have to go after this, but my personal opinion on these decentralized marketplaces that are like, aren't just like a Craigslist, that are actually running on decentralized rails, is they're always going to sort of struggle with some like trust assumptions and things. As long as they're purely buying and selling physical goods, that then you have to like hold an escrow contract or something like that. The user experience is probably going to suffer. And looking forward, very far forward, I guess, where I see this really coming into its own is when NFTs or something like that act as official, as not only like property titles, but have an actual functionality to for the utility of a physical item. So for example, say you buy a car, you buy the NFT title, and you're required to, access to that is required to mint the driving keys that then go to people's phones or wallets. So then you could fully trustlessly buy a vehicle or something on there. And obviously anytime there's a physical thing, there's always, you know, it's never going to be completely perfect. But when you do have that where you're not just like, hey, I paid you. No, I didn't. And it's like, oh, we have to have escrow and people involved and stuff. That's when it will really take off. That's just kind of my random.
Yeah, no, that would be amazing. Yeah, that's definitely one of the ultimate vision, right? Very exciting. Very exciting. Joel, man, thanks for jumping on.
Joe, I wanted to ask one thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wanted to hear your thought about the recent podcast you had with that Vlad guy from Bitcoin Takeover. What happened? He got canceled because of his talk about bringing Roger, interviewing him, and actually talking about the flaws of Lightning or generally interactive-based protocol. Like even Mimblewimble protocol, they are having some problems. So since you are a guy who is actually using cryptocurrency in day-to-day life, so tell us your thoughts about interactive protocols like Lightning or Mimblewimble, or do they even have a future?
Well, as far as Mimblewimble is concerned, I'm not super familiar with some of those issues. I do know that the original Mimblewimble had, I can't read that quickly enough in real time, but first from mine now, the original Mimblewimble did have some issues where you did have to be online to receive transactions. I believe Litecoin's implementation, MWeb, which, by the way, on my channel, Digital Cash Network, I interviewed the David Burkett of who did the MWeb block. I don't think they have that limit. As far as Lightning, because as I like to say, the anyone to anyone TPS of Lightning is zero, because you need not only a channel and a route with people, but there has to be liquidity along that route, and it's super capital intensive. And it ends up being, we're starting to see with like Kraken, for example, Kraken's new wallet. They came out of the wallet, someone said no Lightning, and they said, yeah, we're not going to do Lightning. That shit's terrible. That's kind of what they said. It's a great exchange for exchange settlement tool, or if you want to, like, you can't afford a single Bitcoin transaction every time you buy, so you dollar cost average through a Lightning channel out from there. Okay, that's a good use case. But for the peer-to-peer cash, probably not. But anyway, I think that it's funny when people actually start trying to use Lightning, that people started to wake up to like the hype around it. And it's especially when ordinals hit, all of a sudden those 50 cent to $2 Bitcoin transaction fees that were okay for doing Lightning, then yeah, that just became a big problem actually. So anyway, that's Listen, that
your mobs might go after you.
Listen, I have monetized the Twitter mobs. Okay,
so I see you're bring them Vlad, I think you should join this Monero podcast. I think Doug will have a nice interview with him.
Yeah, well, he tweeted today, happy birthday to Monero, and he's like, if I had Monero, I'd spend some today, something to that effect.
But there is two other.
I told him drop a Monero address, and we'll send you. We may or may not send you some, and he's since done that. So guys, send Vlad some Monero tips. Let's show him some love. Thanks, Douglas. Guess now I'll have to get on my podcast. All right, so yeah, he'll come on. He'll have me on his show. That's very cool.
Oh. Can you open
he is a Monero
one
fan.
Thing I've linked in the private chat, that about that green thing. There is a discussion going on over there. I think it will be interesting if everyone gives their thought over here.
Yeah, we can try to do that. Vlad is saying there is a second best, and it's called Monero. All right, so Vlad is, he's on board with Monero, guys. We won Vlad.
That's a really great dig at Sailor too. I know he's not a fan of Sailor. I gotta hop up and do dinner and stuff. Bye bye, guys.
Joel, thanks so much, man. Thanks for stopping in. Appreciate it.
All right, peace.
Very cool. All right, guys.
A couple news stories I would like to cover. Since didn't really do news, but I have a couple links I will show.
Roll the news clip. Might as well make it official.
All right, let's do it.
And now for a weekly news segment.
All right, you share my screen here. I want to get Body's opinion on a couple of these tweets I saw because I don't really know like how to decipher them. Body can definitely tell me what's going on. So first one is breaking. The Fed just did $120 million USD in emergency repo. Someone important just run out of options to find cash. Aerator, you're in the banking crisis at your peril.
$120 million? Probably nothing. Nah, seriously, I thought the discount, no, in fact, I'm sure the discount window is over now. So like where they offered a discounted rate for banks that had too many long-term low yielding bonds, that they could like trade them in for some kind of liquidity. That's over.
Is that into March 12th?
So yeah, like 120 million, like that, maybe that's probably some small regional bank or something. And honestly, I wouldn't say that this is the thing, you know. But if we started seeing more, right, if you see more of these stories, this bank and then that bank and another bank keep doing this, right, where you start seeing tens of billions, 100 billion, then you start to wonder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that does make sense. And this is related. This is the Federal Reserve's discount window loan surge to 8.5 billion, up from 5 billion, raising concerns about banking stability, increased borrowings, and just deeper sector challenges. Similar.
Yeah, let me and look into it more.
One thing that I would point out, though, is it just shows what a lot of people who are more aware of these things, Nick, there's a hard stop date, and it's just the one time. It just reminds me of when Bernanke was like, yeah, this is just a one-time thing where we're going to expand the monetary supply temporarily, QE, quantitative easing. It's not monetizing the debt. It's just this one-time thing. And there's a two-time, then a three-time, and they're always bigger. And that Fed window was supposed to close, and, like, it's officially closed, but it's not officially closed because it's unofficially open. And it's just, there's just so full of it, man. Like, it's not even, like, it's not even as much as we expected that they were going to, because the thing is they'll come up with some other new ridiculous scheme in order to keep them afloat over here and over there. And find a way to just like consolidate the banks even further. And it just goes to show you, though, that Fed window that's closed is not closed, and it's like kind of open, but unofficially it's open, but not open. And they can never get their story straight because it's always like, oh, we're already on to the next lie. You guys still listening to that one?
Remember, there's nothing more permanent than a temporary government program.
I do think that the Fed discount window was, I want to say it was started in response to 2008. Maybe it wasn't 2008. It's been around for a long time, but what they did is like expanded the liquidity of that window. Like you could, certain assets or whatever you could bring to them, or that you normally couldn't bring to them. For 1 year, they said, okay, you can bring assets of, I don't know, they like widened the criteria so that banks could bring their assets and get liquidity or something like that. It's been a year, so I've, you know, kind of fuzzy on the details, but the Fed discount window has been around for a while, but I am pretty sure it did start as one of those like emergency measure programs when there was some problem.
Yeah. And I'm sure they're going to re-peg gold to the dollar any minute now.
Any day.
All right.
Not everybody who was alive when that happened is dead yet. So they just got to wait a little longer and then they're finally going to close that temporary little issue that they had.
Hey, you know. While I denounce our opponents here, our enemies, I respect the hustle. Like these guys, there's too many Austrians out there that aren't acknowledging that somehow they got the rates from 0 to 5% after a decade of being at zero without collapsing the global economy. That's important because it means that you can't just sit around and wait for this system to collapse. the Austrian, you know, the gold bugs or whoever. You, like, the Austrian school says, oh, it's going to collapse and everything will, you know, fix itself. The market will correct itself. Well, it hasn't corrected itself, which means that you can't just wait around with your gold reserves and your Monero reserves, hoping that one day it collapses and then you'll be able to ride into the sunset to victory without actually having to do anything, without actually having to fight for anything, without actually having to take some personal risk. Just know that they're going to keep this system running and it'll keep running until we all say no.
On the other hand, it's only gotten as high as 5%, and it seems like if they raise it much more, they will start to really break things, because the inflation is still over 3%, 3.5%, and is actually climbing instead of falling like they want it to. And in the 80s, they had to do the same thing with the stagflation, 70s or 80s, and they had to raise the rates to 20%. So if they had to raise it to 20% then, and they can only get it to 5 or 6% now, what's the next time going to be? They might only get it to 1% before it starts to break things. So eventually, yeah, I think something's going
to
break.
That was 76 to 84. And the thing is, or I guess you could say 82. And not to date myself too bad, although you can probably see the gray hair when I have the camera on. But the thing is I am privy to having read the old school Austrian literature where people were saying, educated, highly intelligent people that we build a lot of these philosophies on, in 1982, saying that the demise of the dollar was imminent. It has, you know, 2 to 3 years at best. There's no way it can continue to function. And, you know, some people have asked me on a different show, like what my moment of awakening was. Well, it was Ruby Ridge. And I remember back in the day during what was it, the Waco incident, a lot of us thought, that's it, it's civil war, it's going to be red states versus blue states, was the thing that they still say it now, but people thought the rise is imminent, the civil war is here, we're all doomed, you know, World War III. And it's been two decades, and the thing is money isn't backed by nothing. They tell you flat out what it's backed by. It's backed by the full faith and credit. And then credit is also belief. So like its root, its etymological origins is belief. So faith and belief, it's a religion, people. They tell you that it's a religion. And people are statists through and through. They love their government. They love their neurotic, oh, just please leave me alone. As long as I keep having dollars, then they'll leave me alone and everybody else can fall and die into the rat race of despotic tyranny. But they'll leave me alone because I play ball and I pay my taxes and I back the blue and I love licking government boots. But I digress. My point is they've been saying the dollar was going to collapse since the early 80s. They've been saying that like the end is nigh forever, and Body is absolutely right. Like, these people can come up with scams that boggle the mind, because when you're a sociopath with absolutely no moral principles whatsoever, you will lie about the sun coming up tomorrow. You will lie about needing to drink water to survive because you don't care who gets destroyed in order to prop up the Ponzi scheme a little bit longer and drink your children's blood and, you know, shed your lizard skin and all of that stuff. They'll go on forever, people.
It looks like the dollar will only collapse after every other sovereign currency have collapsed, because the other currency, except the Middle Eastern ones, they are all like in dire situation. So I think those currencies will collapse first, like Argentina's peso, it was gone. So the other currencies will go. Then I think at last dollar will die.
That's commonly referred to as the milkshake theory, the dollar milkshake theory. And if anybody wants to look into it, it's good to understand for sure. And there's probably a lot of truth to that. But I think what Body is saying even more than that is the fact that they got interest rates up to where they did, and the games that they played to pull it off without everything going completely AWOL. Well, another side to that too is, look at how much shares of every major stock is owned by a handful of people. Look at, you know, they build these schemes off of the back of market productivity, and they know exactly how far they can toe the line algorithmically before it's a total collapse, before people will revolt. You know, social media has a lot to do with that too. They can get a good idea of where people are at and what their breaking points are and just toe that line.
Yeah, I think actually the whole medical, yes, I think the whole medical tyranny was very instructive in that regard. It felt like I had a personal line in the sand where I said, I'm going to get violent if they make me take a vaccine. Because at that point, you know, they my life is over. If they make me or my family take that crap, like, there's just no way. Like, that was my line in the sand. And it turns out, I think that was the line in the sand for a lot of other people. We started seeing a lot of protests. We saw the Canadian trucker protest. And so these sociopaths, these psychopaths, they pushed right up to that line. And I think they knew. I think they had always planned to push as far as they could possibly go until that point was hit. And I think with social media and just basically they've got their finger on the pulse of the people in aggregate, I think they pushed right up into that line and said, okay, we're going to stop because we know that now, like, our power could actually come into question if we have some kind of, like, mass violent event here. And in a similar sense, like you're saying, Alaska, that I think they know exactly how far they can push in the financial markets. I think they know how far people can, you know, how bad of a bear market, how bad of a crash are people willing to sustain? How much inflation can they get away with? And, you know, I think that there might be something to be said for maybe they do have to, like we were talking about 1970s, 1980s inflation. I feel like to get rates up to 5%, they paid for it with inflation to avoid collapsing the economy. It wouldn't surprise me if they learned this and sort of like mapped this out in the 70s and the 80s. So I think they're really more on top of it than they were then. But hey, maybe it is possible that we end up in another situation where they've got to inflate away some of that debt. And in order to get the rates up a little bit higher, my guess is they probably won't do that. They'll probably just kind of ride this line for a long time, like keeping rates in the, say, 1-5% range. But bro, they can do it for a decade. They could continue that easily for a decade or maybe even 2 decades, right? And if they can do it for 1 or 2 decades, then they can just practically keep oscillating that forever. So again, that's kind of why I tell people just don't make your plans on the dollar collapsing. Like, don't make your get rich plans or your freedom plans or how do we take back, you know, our lives in the country or the world or whatever. Don't plan on the dollar collapsing. Plan on it not collapsing. Take like 5% of your effort to do the emergency preparedness, to have that readiness in case it does, because it might. But otherwise, plan for it to basically continue on and figure out how you're going to navigate that system and help other people get off of that system.
Yeah, I just want to chime in one more thing about that, too. You know, one of the things that prevents the tyranny from happening in the first place, if anybody's interested in history, you can look into documents like Rex 84, which has been updated, and I participated in the update of that, but that's not available for public consumption. But the main thing is how these people plan to push that limit is based on what you can't live without. So a really good example is if you at least have a graphene phone and know how to use it, if you at least have communication channels outside of WLAN, which is like your traditional cell phone networks and stuff, if you know how to communicate with your neighbors outside of the system, if you know how to trade outside of the system, then it prevents them from using that as leverage to control the population. So the thing is knowing that there is algorithmic control over the population. When people say, oh, they already have my data, what does it matter? Well, I don't think you understand that 99% knowledge gives them almost absolute algorithmic control. But 98% knowledge means there's going to be huge flaws in the projections. And, you know, for every 1 out of 20 people that doesn't have a complete data set on their day-to-day activities, that represents a massive, massive hole, because that's also anybody who does business with you or communicates with you or so, that's also a gap in the knowledge on that person, right? So, if, for example, if everybody who goes to church, right, if you make a habit of turning off your phone and putting it in, you know, an EMF shielding device, and you go to that church and everybody at that church they go dark while they go to church. You know, that one gap in the knowledge base of all of the algorithmic tracking of humanity. Well, now the data set for whatever learning algorithms that are be deployed and so on, now that there's a gap in that data set, that represents a huge flaw in future projections on what you're doing. So everything that you do to improve your privacy just a little bit, every exchange that you make outside of the dollar just a little bit, represents a huge barrier in the progress of tyranny. And just to think of how much worse it would be if there weren't people using, you know, Tor, or if there weren't people who have Monero and know how to use it, if there weren't people that are growing their own garden, right? That's how much further tyranny would already be. And when people talk, you know, speak ill about the United States, it kind of breaks my heart, because even though I hate what's going on in this country, the fact that there's one country where tyranny cannot progress beyond such and such line also holds back tyranny in an innumerable amount of other places. Because, like, when people use Monero to liberate an Iranian into another country, or help a Cuban refugee, like, do business back home and all of that stuff, that's a huge bulwark against tyranny worldwide. That it's one of the reasons why we can't let America fall. We just can't let it fall unless we have something better.
That's why you guys need to win.
Amazing rant.
Yeah, and the guy in the chat, he said correctly, as long as you guys have, I think, the naval fleet for trading, and I think Canada and Australia, they have those uranium mines and petrodollar. As long as you guys have those, then I think with two navies, Ocean Act, or like upgraded version of like four navies, Ocean Act, I think you guys can handle it fine. I think the dollar will die at last. At the end of, I think, when every country's currency have collapsed, I think that only dollar will collapse.
All right. I'm going to show one more thing. So I noticed this a couple days ago. I don't know if anyone else did, but the blockchain, the Monero transaction pool, was full, but in a completely different way. It was full in the opposite way. Instead of thousands of tiny transactions, it was hundreds of extremely large ones. Most of them were about 100 kilobytes and had 149 inputs, and it would take just 6 transactions to fill up a whole block. So you can see this one block right here had a measly 6 transactions, and there were about 10 blocks lined up that had just 6 transactions. And I guess on top of that, the automatic fee was not keeping up properly, and I had a transaction I set at 6 p.m., and it did not get a single confirmation until 3 hours later. Even though my fee rate was higher than these large transactions, my fee rate was like a 120, 130 nanoneros per byte. And all of these large ones you can see were only 80. So it looks like these larger transactions were being preferred just because they had a much higher fee, even though the fee rate was technically lower per byte. So that definitely caused some issues. Not as much on the node side, more of in people trying to actually make transactions and get them confirmed in a reasonable time. You had to really use fast fee, unless automatic just happened to be a high enough fee for you. Yeah, these blocks are fat, very fat blocks. And there's a lot of speculation of what that was, but a lot of people, and I thought this, that it is probably the spammers like reconsolidating all of their inputs from spending, you know, spamming like crazy over the past few weeks. Some people suggested some other things. But yeah,
what are some of the other suggestions? Like just a different style of attack, potentially?
Yeah, I was thinking that, they were just doing the opposite thing to see what would happen. But I think it does make sense that they were consolidating.
I would also point out that it could have something to do with testing. If I had a lot of data and a lot of Monero, I might do something like this to test the fee model.
No, I mean, that's the thing, is that honestly, like, out of all this spam attack that's been happening, it's kind of forced some good things to come out of it. And in reality, I think we talked about this on Saturday. In reality, if it was an adversary, they could be doing this. They could still be doing this, or they would have done it smarter. There's a lot of better things they could have done. So it could still be an adversary, but maybe it's just somebody like playing around, honestly. So, yep.
The same person spamming the general fund.
What I find really interesting here is that we're talking about, you know, confirmation times of 3 hours being extremely slow, and we're like, compared to ACH where it takes 3 days, and you see a whole big difference.
I mean, that's still bad though. I'm not going to pretend like that's remotely good at all. That's still,
oh yeah, and, no, like, it's definitely not.
Wasn't
good.
Even with like the protocol or anything. It was more of like, I think there's some optimizations to be made with automatic fee, because if automatic fee was just a little bit higher, it would have been better. Because I saw a lot of transactions that had just a little bit higher fee rate than mine that were getting in way sooner. And also the preferred fee weight could maybe be optimized, because those large transactions, even though very high fee, we're talking like close to, well, let me see. This one, so this one large transaction, it was about 100 kilobytes. It had 0.008 XMR total fee, which is really high. I mean, you know, relatively. But even though the actual fee rate was low, it was at 80 nanos per byte. So maybe there's some change that can be made there to prefer transactions that have a higher fee rate, not just because it's a large transaction. But that was interesting. That was interesting to see.
There almost certainly has to be some forum somewhere where a group of botnet, like Monero millionaires or whatever, are like doing some kind of something for the lols, is like what I'm starting to lean to.
You should look at those links. Those Zcash guys are also now talking about using RandomX. And that also, we are now, they are discussing what's the advantages of having botnet.
Okay, I'm probably going to bring up this this giveaway first. Probably going to go ahead and run that. So guys, if you haven't commented your receiving address page for Cake Wallet, I'm going to share my screen again. I got to pull this up.
What if we don't have Twitter?
Unfortunately, this giveaway is on Twitter. I guess we'd have to consider something for Twitter.
Keep in mind, it's to draw attention for the normies, people. Like, we need the normies to know about Monero, so it kind of has to be on the public-facing world.
Unfortunately, it is just true that everyone is on Twitter. But if you have other suggestions for how to do giveaways not on Twitter, then please let us know. I'm sure there's other ways, but this is what was chosen. Wasn't my choice, so yep. So yeah, go ahead, comment down below. I will give it just a few seconds once I get this. I'm going to get this Twitter picker site set up. And then I'll run the giveaway. And there'll be 10 people now, receiving $25 XMR. Sorry, go ahead.
Now, about that Antminer X5, somebody earlier mentioned something about buying it in Monero. And that seems like a really dumb idea to me, to buy it in Monero when the whole point is to make Monero. If I was going to buy it, I would buy it with crappy dollars and then use it to make good Monero.
Well, it just depends on your goals, bro. I mean, one of the reasons why I'm actually super optimistic about a dedicated mining device is distributing significant hash power amongst people invested in the community. That doesn't give them any particular competitive advantage. They're just putting more on stake, right? So the thing is if it was a quality product, I mean, I'm kind of the sort of person who would totally buy it. Like, you know, Body was mentioning how the hash rate is down. Well, yeah, I mean, you would not believe how many processors are not mining right now in Alaska because it's starting to get warm. I mean, I don't like my house above, you know, 65 degrees. So it's like, it makes a lot of sense that, you know, using it for heat and all of that. But if it wasn't computers that I was using anyway, then I might just run one in a garage or something like that. I mean, why not? You know, it's if you have the fiat to just throw at the hash power of Monero. But the other thing is, if you have Monero and you want to strengthen the network of Monero, I mean, it just really depends a lot. Like, obviously, the liquidity of Monero in Alaska is as such where it would be a huge financial issue up here. But, you know, if Monero was the same fiat price worldwide, then it kind of does make sense.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. I might end up trying to get the money together and buy one just for the lulls, for the heat in the winter, especially if I can ramp it up and down. because that thing uses a lot of power, but if I can like ramp it down to like half or something, that would be just about perfect, I think.
Well, I mean, I'm seriously thinking about it for my greenhouse. That would be amazing for, you know, if you're an Alaskan running a greenhouse year round. I mean, because I got to heat it somehow, right? So it's like, that would probably be enough heat, especially on certain plants like citrus plants in Alaska need a lot of heat. You could run it through the root systems, like just blow the air through the root systems or something like that. You could use it to heat your water supply. Like I'm very interested in a dedicated mining machine, and it's not about how efficient it is because of where I live.
All right, guys.
Abdullah has been talking about that as a potential next Noto product.
Yeah, that's why I want him to be at Monerotopia, because I would love to vet them personally. But if Abdullah puts one together, I mean, count me in. Shut up and take my money.
Go ahead, Tux.
All right, you guys want me to do it? Or you...
Do it, bro. Do it.
All right. Here we go. Make sure this
pull the trigger.
10 winners. You got to be following Cake Wallet or Monero.com. Oh, I guess I can't do or. I'm just going to do at Cake Wallet then.
Awesome.
At least 50. There are a few rules to try and avoid like bot accounts. There's a lot of comments on this tweet. 188 now. At least 50 tweets, which I think includes like comments and retweets. At least 1 month old.
Okay.
All right.
Sweet.
Continue. All right. So here are the... Wait. So 78 entries loaded. Oh, okay. Just wasn't the winners yet. It's just showing me everyone. All right. Yeah. I got a lot of people.
Shit.
All right.
Vic. Vic won.
I don't know why these are included also.
I mean, just on a matter of principle, I would be kind of like depressed if Vic wasn't on the list. You know, it's like, wait a minute, what's going on here?
I'm not sure why these accounts, and maybe it's because they were tagged. Let me go back. Oh, retweet picker. Oh, this isn't comment picker. We're not doing retweets. We're doing comments. Hold on, guys. Let me find something that'll let me do the comments real quick.
Okay.
I like how he's building the suspense. You know, like great. It's this is gonna be the hottest show ever, Doug.
Wait, but who's the giveaway? You had a comment, like, and retweet?
You didn't have to retweet. You had to respond, did a comment with a screenshot of your Cake Wallet Monero receive page, and you have to follow both accounts, Cake Wallet and Monero.com. Someone told me to use Twitter picker. Apparently it's a retweet picker, not for comments, so I gotta find something else real quick.
Oh, okay. It only is a retweet.
This one's the one that's being advertised. Yet.
Speaking of retweeting, like and share and retweet the show, guys, on Twitter.
I was thinking about doing a giveaway that would be really novel, and I think I'm like set enough where I'm interested in it. But I was thinking about shipping, and it'd have to be in the States. Like a quarter of a cow purchased with Monero as a giveaway. it'd just be like, this cow never had fiat liquidity injection. It is the cleanest cow, morally speaking, that you can consume. But then, I mean, someone would have to have a dedicated freezer.
Yeah, you know? I almost did buy that off of someone in years past. But yeah, it's a whole hassle. You need the freezer. You need the freezer for that.
Well, it's par for the course up here to have at least like five freezers.
So, sure. I got to get to that point. We got to get that going. Missing out. Frozen grass.
You know, Doug, just saying, land is really cheap up here. Really cheap.
I know. I was talking to somebody recently about Alaska. I was like, I know a guy there. I know a guy who's living the dream there. Yeah, man. I'm jealous.
Well, and the other thing is if you did decide to do it, I would be more than happy to help you build a cabin, show you the ropes on all of it, no problem. And then you could be that guy. Like your wife says, Farmer Doug.
I mean, Sunita's not going to be there. That should be Farmer Doug on his own. Sunita's not. I'm not convincing Sunita of this anytime soon.
I will tell you, dude. Like, don't let this leave the Monero community.
My children will be visiting me.
I'm telling you, like, all of those listening right now, do not let it leave the Monero community, because we don't want everybody up here. But there is a good 5 months out of the year where there is no place in the world better to live. And if Sunita was up here for those 5 months, she would be a believer. I'm telling you. Like,
we have to do a Monerotopia up there, man.
I mean, I'll help if that's what you want to do, but, you know, just saying. Like, everybody is complaining about the distance with Argentina. I mean, come on.
Alaska, it's a hard sell. It's a hard sell. But during those 5 months, it's amazing, right?
There's nowhere in the world that I would rather be, like, not even close. And I mean, I am a very well-traveled individual, and it's not even close, dude. Especially when it's permanent daylight out. I mean, it's greener than everywhere else. It's cleaner than everywhere else. Like, the weather is amazing. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's,
dude, you're getting me going out there. Oh my god, I could smell the nature now.
But if anybody doesn't accept Monero for payment, make sure that you're telling them that it's horrible and you have to live in an igloo and bears are constantly attacking you and the locals are murderous psychopaths. That last one's true.
Yeah, you want to keep out the riffraff.
Yeah, Alaska has a crazy high murder rate. But then people are like, isn't that horrible? And it's like, well, let's not throw the baby out with who exactly is being murdered here. You know, there's good murder and there's bad murder. All right. Like, let's not just.
Yeah, and you guys got to take things into your own hands up there.
Yes, exactly.
All murder is bad murder, because if you go by the libertarian thing of don't hurt people and don't take their stuff, you're violating the don't hurt people.
No, it's the non-aggression principle.
Yeah,
aggression.
Self-defense.
Yeah. See,
don't hurt people, like, and don't take their stuff.
That's exactly what gets you murdered up here. I'm telling you. It's when you, right. When you hurt people or take their stuff, that's how people go. A lot of people go missing up here. You ever wonder why there's so many plane crashes? It's because if they bought those planes with ill-gotten gains, accidents happen. Okay.
If you buy your planes with ill-gotten gains, you'd better be careful or you might go up in flames.
Should have used Monero, man. If you bought a plane and you didn't do it right, you should have used Monero. That's all there is to it.
Dude, you got me all excited about Alaska. Tux, what's going on? Did you find your...
All right, I may have found something. System. I am... So, it looks
just scroll like... Through, just scroll through and pick one, big.
I honestly might have to do that. Because of the Twitter API stuff, it looks like none of these support. I found several that say they do comments, but they're all broken. The only problem is there's so many, there's like no way for me to do it fair. So I'm going to try this one, last one I found real quick.
Pull up a random number generator and set the range to the number that you have.
Exactly.
Tell it to pick 10, and that's way easier.
And then just make those the 10 winning numbers.
And honestly, you should pick 9 and then, like, best comment that I read within the next 5 minutes. And just, like, post the comment. Give a little street cred to the guy who didn't just go, comment or whatever. Somebody who said something awesome about the birthday, like the guy who wrote the poem or something.
Rise to liberty. Jump up, man. Jump up and say hello.
Yeah. I don't know why a guy who has this show is always so shy to come on this one. I mean, even though he's been on the show, but...
What else got? Was there any other news this week?
I kind of have something if you're... he's got it? Okay. Well, basically, it's a little bit of an early announcement, but I do plan on firing back up the Get Graphene OS project, and we're probably going to do something akin to, like, a mailing list, like a pre-launch mailing list. And we're going to see if we can't flood the market within certain communities for people to switch to secure private smartphones. Because I think that the market is kind of reinvigorated. There was a serious issue with getting supply to the point where there was almost no point in even having a website. Cause like, as soon as I could get them, they were just already gone anyway. And I'm sure a lot of people had that same problem, but, I think that it is time. And the other thing is graphene has just gotten so amazing. I mean, Tux was talking earlier about the fact that like Android Auto on graphing is now like,
all right, guys, I think I got it. Sorry to interrupt.
Go for it, man. I was just stalling.
Here we go. Can you see it?
Oh, shit.
It's going. It's going.
It's picking. Oh, who do we got? You know any of these people?
I do know this guy.
Tux, you run any of these accounts? These are all your accounts?
Yeah, these are all my alts. I have a script that generates hundreds of alts at a time.
Oh, I'm seeing some recognizable faces. Oh, we know that guy. He's the nano guy, right?
Yeah.
Not
yep.
the nano guy, Vin, but yep. a nano guy. He's a nice guy.
All right, so here's the 10 winners. Let's get a screenshot, too. All right, looks like everyone has a screenshot, oh, except for this comment. This one will have to be rerun. Mark that invalid. Yeah, that's a spam comment. Repick that one. All right, there we go. The XMR Lord. Okay, looks like everyone so far has a screenshot, which is that t.co link. I will start issuing out the giveaway funds. So yeah, these are the winners.
Right.
Congratulations to the winners.
Phoenix Down 909, the XMR Lord, 0x Piker 15, Bitcoin Galloway, Vinny Barbos. I'm just gonna say Vinny. I'm gonna pronounce the rest of his name very incorrectly. Crypto Damning and Tegan Moore. All right, guys. Thanks for joining for the giveaway. I'm gonna send this in one giant transaction from my Cake wallet, since you can add extra recipients.
Very cool.
I didn't even know you could do that. That's super.
Yep.
Yeah, you just click on the add recipient button and it brings up a little thing where you can swipe like right and left between the different people. That's super easy.
And no need to ask permission from banks.
Anybody else want to jump up?
Those operating system ROMs are very great. And now even the new ones are coming out, like radio encrypted mesh networks, open source encrypted mesh networks and radio communications, fully encrypted. So yeah, those will be, I think in future we will see a hardware wallet.
Go ahead.
That mesh network that I was recently hearing about.
Yeah, see the link. There is a
Meshtastic. You know Meshtastic? Have you guys seen that?
Yeah, they are doing something open source, encrypted mesh radio communication. Yes. It's sending text. So if they can send text, so we can understand that we could send Monero transaction or like any kind of blind signature transaction.
Yeah, mesh tech is, and you know, this is one of the principles behind trying to do the Git graphing thing is like tech is so far outpacing most people's ability to understand it and
the
use
tech
it.
Was already and there. Like, it was like regulated, heavily regulated by the military and the government. But the thing is, with AI and open source development, everything is coming back.
Yeah, mesh networks go way, way back. Yeah, it's but where they're at now, and probably one of the biggest news stories of all the last couple of weeks has been Google like building onto their mesh network capabilities with Google Fied phones and Google Android. Basically everybody's phone is operating on behalf of the spy tech Panopticon. This is such a big deal, and I don't feel like anybody even gives a shit. They're just like, now they compete with Apple, and it's like, no, you guys don't understand. They just finished the Skynet spy grid. Like, they literally just finished. So basically, between Amazon with like Ring, Google's AirTag version of Google, I don't know, I don't use any of that crap, but, and then Apple AirTag systems. I mean, I don't know what the actual underlying systems are called on any of those three, because I know enough to know what it's doing, and it's horrifying. And this is yet another reason why at this point, you know, so I remember way back in the day jailbreaking phones, and it was always iPhones, right? Everybody wanted to jailbreak their iPhone. And I just remember it just got to the point where it was like, this takes so much effort, and they just immediately brick the phone with the next update. Like, I'm just not even going to participate anymore, right? And so that was when I was never going to go back to anything Apple. Like, that was it. And I'm so grateful that the Android open source project, you know, has still remained so virile, right? Because it's like the backbone of freedom, respecting everything, whether it be cats, scrapping,
they
or whatever.
Want free developers.
Yeah. And the thing is like at this point, though, like having an iPhone, and I'm not trying to shame people here, but or having like a Samsung, Google-fi, you know, all of that stuff, like you're basically complicit beyond just, you know, like allowing for it. You're helping the enemy spy on people who might choose to opt out. Like your iPhone is spying on people just by its very existence. Like when you do business or you talk to somebody or whatever, by being an iPhone user, you are contributing to their losing their privacy, even though it was you who chose to use the iPhone, right? And now Samsung's doing the same thing if it uses Google anything, or if it, and the thing is by phones like passively participating in the mesh network spy grid, we have now crossed a horrifying it's a terrible proposition. But on the flip side, there are mesh network services where you can still have access to the internet in a grid down situation and all kinds of other stuff. Mesh networks are, their potential for freedom is absolutely mind-blowing, right? But right now, the people that are pushing their development, and that's why it's important for us to get the normies out of the spy grid where they're at. We can't keep going in the tech world if we don't bring people who are interested in joining us along for the ride. And that's kind of the premise where, like, it might be easy for us to flash our own graphene phones, or it might be easy for us to, you know, use Monero wallets. But the thing is what Cake is doing for the normie, like bringing them into the world of freedom, respecting cryptocurrency and all that, I think a lot of people in this space have no idea how insanely important that is, right? And that's also why I'm, you know, with my Nodos and probably many more, I want to set it up where it's like, here, you don't even have to worry about your wallet syncing. I have a node set up for you. It just runs in the background when you want to boot up your Monero wallet and just use it. It just works, you know? We have to make it accessible.
Yeah, very truly said.
Let me play this this video for a sec.
Yeah, the Flipper Zero Star.
We've had a lot of comments about, like, what is Meshtastic?
And then what is it?
I mean, that's... All right, so what is it? Meshtastic is a bit of software. It's open source. And you run the Meshtastic firmware on your LoRa device.
And this?
And that's just not a LoRa device. And you run an app, a Meshtastic app on your phone. What's a LoRa device? They were used for Internet of Things back in the day.
Internet
thing. Internet of Things. Yes. And so the protocol was used for like temperature sensor data, humidity sensor data, door open, gate open, close, that kind of thing. So Meshtastic puts that kind of in a realm where we can use it for sending messages.
And finally, gold.
Water dividing.
Yes. So how is it different than when we send like
guys at Aerotopia?
Okay, so when I send it,
yeah, that's a good idea.
Through their infrastructure to your closest cell tower to your phone.
Makes sense.
Okay. So with this stuff, it goes from my phone to my Meshtastic device directly to yours, or through a number of mesh nodes, then to your phone through your mesh.
So we are now the cell tower.
Yeah, so essentially we're doing away with the man.
The man. Well, the new man.
Yeah.
What is this done?
So that's an upgraded antenna. The antennas that come with these little helping bones, they're okay. But that's a bit of an upgrade. We'll do an extra video on
that. And what is that?
There is a lovely 3D printed case that I printed, but it's a team beam. And because I'm a genius, I ordered the wrong device. This one doesn't have a screen, but it's actually okay. It's still worth it.
Enough. But very cool.
Yeah, the new ones are great. But yeah, the thing is, the Mobile Telecom Act, as well as all those regulations which created the current surveillance apparatus, if we don't defeat those things, we are in big trouble.
We got to all use those down in Mexico City together. Rise to Liberty, what's going on, man?
Oh, not much. Trying to get some work done in the background, which is why I didn't come up.
No worries.
I'll just come up and hang out with all of you fine gentlemen. So, happy birthday, Monero.
All right. Yeah, how you feeling about that?
I think it's incredible that it's lasted 10 years. I mean, I think that kind of speaks to the dedication of this community. I mean, I was trying to think about it. I saw a thread on Twitter earlier, refused to call it X, but somebody was given or made a thread about, you know, some historical moments throughout the 10 years, and started thinking there wasn't really any like major setbacks that haven't been either recovered from or the Monero community and Monero itself came out better on the other side. There's nothing, at least that I can think of anyways. So I think that it kind of just speaks to the utility of it. I mean, 10 years, that's incredible. And I was looking at the price charts earlier, pretty stable price. I mean, that's one of the largest or one of the most common criticisms I hear about crypto just in general is, you know, the fluctuating price. And it's like, well, look at this one. This one not only gives you privacy, which is absolutely necessary unless you want to live as a modern serf. So you got your privacy and you got a fairly decently stable price. So I, at this point, other than making it easy for the normies, I don't see what's stopping it other than I've ran into a lot of people in real life that could care less about privacy. Get the whole, I'm not doing anything wrong, so I have nothing to hide. And it's like, first of all, that is the stupidest argument I've ever heard. But it's also, that's a misnomer. I mean, it has nothing to do with the fact that you have nothing to hide. It has nothing to do with doing good or bad. It's privacy is neutral. Of course, there are some people with bad intentions that utilize it for bad purposes, but that's everything. You can't avoid that. You can't stop that. The best thing you can do is have people with good intentions using the same tools. So it's just such a stupid argument. And that's one thing that I have always felt that I could bring to the table is sharing why privacy is important in the first place. Because if you don't breach that, I mean, we can build the most awesome community, the best functioning coin, the tightest privacy. Doesn't matter if people don't find value in privacy itself.
Right. The tool is useless if not enough people are using it, right? It needs a network effect. We need people to first understand why opting out is important, why privacy is important, why it's vital.
Yeah.
I think it's a growing meme, and the understanding is becoming more mainstream. How about in the Liberty community specifically? You know, you're tied in close, you're in those networks in the libertarian or Liberty community. What's your feel there in terms of Monero? Is Monero, the meme of Monero, growing there?
So it's steady, but slow paced, which isn't always the worst thing. My personal view about it at this point is that it's kind of turned into you're going to have to repeat it enough times until it becomes the truth. And so luckily, I have the ability to be able to share the word of Monero, you know, get out some wonderful Monero propaganda, share some, you know, funny, you know, jabs at the Bitcoin community. And, do that from official Libertarian Party accounts. So it's slowly growing. Like I've gotten more and more good feedback instead of just what's that, or it's just a shit coin. And it's like, okay, well, if it's just a shit coin, then I assume that you are probably a Fed. You're just trying to get me to not buy it. But yeah, it's growing. I'm running into more and more people who know what it is and get excited when they see the mention of Monero. So slow and steady wins the race, I guess.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
However, I will say I don't understand why anybody, not just libertarians, but just anybody in the Liberty movement at all that feels that they're under that umbrella isn't just going, just diving in, you know, going full bore into Monero, because this is literally the pinnacle of what the Liberty movement is trying to achieve. And this is a peaceful solution to be able to delegitimize the state, which is the whole point. And we can take it from here and we can do it peacefully. This is the solution we've been wanting. And everyone's just like, nah, yeah, well, Bitcoin, blah, blah, blah. And it's, or I don't want to learn crypto. Oh, it's on a blockchain. And so it automatically means it's traceable no matter what. And I understand that fear. However, there's definitely just some education. And I think that's going to kind of fall back on us. Mm. You know, I've definitely fought the good fight on that and continue to do so. Which one thing before I forget, Tux, I told you earlier that I was going to message you. So one thing I wanted to do, and since I'm here with everybody, is to get at least a basic foundation for an infographic or like a like, oh, you're new to Monero, you should do this, you should do this, maybe like a 3 bullet points of like prerequisites of something that you might want to learn before. Just the basic, like I can hand this to somebody and then after reading it, they can be up and rolling with Cake Wallet. They might not be able to start, you know, putting a full node out off this document, but to get people using it is kind of my thought. So I guess the best thing I could ask anybody here is what should be included in on that document?
I'm trying to remember where. I'm pretty sure there's something like that that exists already.
Yeah, that pamphlet.
I've seen a couple.
He comes on. Well, the thing is with a few modifications, some of those pamphlets can be made perfect for that.
Yeah, and I've seen different versions pop up, you know, over the past couple of years, but there's still always like this level of like you are expected to know certain things by the time you get this document. And
yeah, that's exactly.
So is that something that like you're trying to like? That could be easily made if you want one. If you're trying to get like a basic pamphlet that has like information for complete noobs.
Well, yeah. So the point of me bringing it up is I was going to make the document. That's, you know, kind of my thing, graphic design, that sort of stuff. But so getting a document made, putting it out there, putting it out into the community, that way I can contribute somehow. Not that I don't, but, you know, just doing.
Yeah, really more. The hard part is the list for starting up.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of us, we underestimate our own technical proficiency when we're trying to do these things. Sometimes even people who have gotten kind of accustomed to their smartphone or whatever, when you say download an app, they'll even say like, how do I download an app? And it's like almost unthinkable. They're not asking how to sideload an app. Like they're trying to figure out how to use an app store that's already on their phone and they don't even know that. And like that, yeah. That's part of the problem is I think we don't, you know, and a lot of people might use terms like idiot proof it, but the reality is just because somebody hasn't focused their attention on, you know, technical proficiency in life, some of these people are way more qualified at a lot of other things than any of us are. They've just never taken the time to learn how to use a smartphone. Or another thing is like, you know, those basic questions that we hear all the time. I think a lot of the time we're so quick to have an answer that we don't appreciate how entrenched the fear is of people getting taken for a ride on, you know, the next thing, right? Is this another fad? You know, because Bitcoin has become like the next thing. And so then you say like, this is the next thing of the next thing is what they're hearing, you know?
Well, and I've also heard from a lot of normies, just because trying to get people into the community, there's always toxicity within the Bitcoin community. And not to say that there is absolutely none in the Monero community, but my personal opinion is that this is the absolute best community, the most supportive. But it turns people off as soon as they see any sign of trouble, which is, you know, a classic issue in the LP. But I've heard you talk about this a lot, Alaskanon, that we're trying to bridge that gap. I'm not sure exactly everything that should be on the list. As the person I am, I always try to remember where I once was, especially when I, you know, like, oh, you don't know the government's corrupt? Like, what an idiot. Try not to be that person, because at one point I didn't know either. I personally believe that it can be done. We just need to get something out there, throw it out to the community, and just let it run in the circles and slowly improve. Maybe mine dies out, somebody comes up with a better one. I mean, obviously that's how things are done around here. But, you know, I haven't seen, at least on my end, and anybody correct me if I'm wrong, but I haven't seen something like this to really, like, I could take it, hand it to my 70-year-old mother. She could read it, maybe read it through a couple of times, ask a question or two. She's up and rolling by the end of the day. So,
yeah, the bulleted list, you know, and the thing is the branding of each, and like if you're using the pamphlet idea, you know, having like the simple start, or like simply starting your wallet or whatever.
Yep.
And then the next one would be, what is my seed phrase? How does it work? Why does it work? And you give them those two things, and that's it. This is how you start. And then it just says, store your seed phrase. And if you have questions about what a seed phrase is, see this pamphlet, and you hand them out together. And then they get
someone
rolling.
Someone should make a business about the policy. 18-word seed in metal or titanium or something.
Yeah, because the seed thing, just generally, as far as people who are truly crypto noobs, is the thing that confuses them the most, and it's the thing that freaks them out the most, is what I've found. Because the idea of having wealth stored in a way where it can't be retrieved unless I keep the seed, but then you try to explain to them, well, I mean, the thing is it's more difficult to lose your funds with this method than any other method that I know of.
The easiest...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the easiest way I've found to store my seed is within my password manager.
Yeah,
but remember, a password manager is like completely outside of the realm of the normie. Like, most people
not necessarily. I want to bring something up on that. This is something that we're trying to add to Cake, actually, is the ability to, as soon as the seed phrase pay shows up, there'll be a button that will trigger a save to your password manager prompt for the seed. And the thing is that people who already use, so like we're talking about normies, right? Normies use iPhones. iPhones come with iCloud Keychain, and that could effectively be used as a super simple and really actually pretty secure way to store your seed phrase. There's definitely options that I would prefer over that, but it's still a really good way.
That is such a good idea. Totally forgot that the Apple has like the Cloud Keychain.
Yeah. And it is, and like, I know it's Apple, you know, privacy, but like, it is actually like secure.
Yeah. Who cares if the normie gets into crypto, then you won.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's a really easy way to, now we're running into some issues with that, unfortunately, that we're going to have to figure out how to get around. And the issue is that it seems to want the field to require some kind of user interaction just to be able to pass it to the password manager and have the prompt show up. But if we can figure out a workaround for that, it would be perfect, because then all you have to do is tap Save to Password Manager, brings up a prompt for, like on Android, it'll be your default password manager. And in iOS, it's the same, where you can choose it. So like if you have Bitwarden, so like a lot of people use Bitwarden or ProtonPass, if that's set as your default password manager in the OS for iOS or Android, that prompt will call to ProtonPass or Bitwarden. It'll be your default password manager. So if you don't want to use the default one, like iCloud Keychain or Google, whatever, it can call one that's better that you have installed yourself, which is great.
Our new Proton password manager is great. It has good UI. So, and with Cake, I think the color scheme will also match better. And I think, as chat someone is telling, for Monero, we need a good hardware wallet and maybe a metal wallet.
Now, I'm just kind of thinking out loud here, but and I'm totally unaware of the programming side of this, but what would it take to get like a entirely stripped down basic like training app to be able to get people used to using the basic functions of a wallet before they start doing it with their real money?
I would point out just using smaller amounts with a real wallet would probably be the best.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And then not only that, but the real trick would be, you know, you have them use a real wallet with smaller amounts, and then I wonder if you couldn't just make like a bot that will send and receive the Monero but deduct the fee that is being taken, right? So you send the bot like 0.05 XMR, and then he sends you back like 0.042 or whatever. Like it's so you can feel out the send and receive, and then you can use a QR code on your computer, or it'll, you know, like there could be a QR code like right on your pamphlet that says like, if you want to try it out, like you can send Monero to this QR code, and then it will send you back the same Monero minus the fees.
Yeah, I like that idea. Because my thought in this, because you made a good point that the seed phrase, just using the wallet in general, is incredibly intimidating to people who are not tech savvy or just not used to any of this. So, I mean, the way I've done it in the past, like you just said, just use smaller amounts. I've set up wallets for people, showed them how it worked, and then sent them $5-$10 and have done just that. It's kind of sent it back and forth, said, this is how you do it. Okay, I'll show you. Now you do it.
Well, another thing that happens, like, so I've set a lot of people up with Monero wallets, like about 0.0001% as many as Doug has, which is like a lot. And the thing is one of the first things that happens is like I tell them to store the seed phrase, and then they're like, where should I put it? How should I write it down? And then eventually they always ask me, will you save it? And it's like, but at the same time, I get it, right? And I mean, I'm giving them free money anyway, so I guess they're probably thinking like, well, I mean, he gave it to me, so. But the thing is like a lot of the time, they then ask me to store their seed phrase. And a lot of these people, if you try to bring a password manager into it, you know, on the one hand, I think like, are we undermining it? But on the other hand, the people that we're trying to reach, they might not care about the privacy. They're just interested in using the tech. And that, you know, like he was saying, the Apple keychain thing is, I mean, that's brilliant because the normie loves convenience, right? So that's a masterful like stroke of genius as far as preventing that one hiccup, that one, because for some reason, people trust all of their data to be stored in the iCloud, including their credit card information and everything. But then they freak out at the idea of it being put in a distributed ledger on what is effectively a cloud. And it's just like, wait, why? It's like, it's the same thing, only better, right?
I mean, just the good old write down your seed, though. Isn't that pretty simple?
Well, no, I mean, you would be surprised how many times people screw that up. I mean, it's, you know, it's like, before it was 25 words, it's not as many now. But honestly, writing it down on a piece of paper is not great, because if that's the only place you have your seed, then like that piece of paper can get lost. Someone can spill water on it. I mean, someone can take it, at least if you put it in a password manager, like a good one. That's end-to-end encrypted properly. You know, we're not talking about like LastPass, right? Like Bitwarden or ProtonPass. At least you put it in there. In order to get to it, it requires some form of authentication. And then on top of that, it's stored digitally in a way that it'll be like there always for the most part. Now I think maybe putting it in there and then also putting it somewhere else, like stamping it in metal and then like, yep, saving it metal, more very, very safe.
The only
I think
way.
Doing both of those things is ideal. I don't think people should necessarily do one or the other.
See, I do this weird thing, and it's just me because I'm weird. I use KeePass, and so my database file for my password manager is my own. It's not on any cloud service. My cloud backup is called a thumb drive. So I have it on, you know, I have the key file on my computers, and I have the key file on a flash drive, and I back it up so that if I ever lose it, I still have access to it on the flash drive. I know that that's not something normies are going to do, but that's why I feel like I can trust it, because it's not on any cloud.
I mean, even if it is, you know, like the encryption used for, like the Word is, it's really good. And I know, like, there's concerns about, oh, you know, the take now, encrypt, decrypt later kind of policy of the surveillance agencies. But for a long time, for the foreseeable future, using something like Bitwarden, even on their official servers, I mean, personally, I self-host my own Bitwarden server, but even using their official ones, it's like really, 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 really good. So,
or you can do like Michael just suggested, and you can just have it tattooed, you know,
tattoo it so then somebody can just strip you and then get your seed.
So what I'm trying to teach my kids to do is work on memorizing seed phrases and get really used to the idea of memorizing them.
Oh, wow.
It's like, remember when kids used to know phone numbers? Oh, my God, I'm so old.
You just made me feel old.
Actually, I'm not that old, and I still remember having to memorize phone numbers. So, yes.
I still memorize important phone numbers, and I always will, till I'm too old to remember phone numbers.
I know one phone number right off the top of my head, so that's at least one good thing.
That's 1,000% plus more than the average person.
I like the idea of training your kids to memorize the seed phrase. That's great.
And you got to switch it up on them, too. You have to give them new seed phrases to memorize once in a while. Like, and then...
Now, see, memorizing the seed phrase is by far the best thing you can possibly do, because then there's no copy of it anywhere. And as long as you make sure to remember it, there's no way that somebody's going to get that from you without coercion, like waterboarding or something like that.
That one caveat, as long as you remember.
Just know, guys, this is some, it's kind of like, this is advanced. Like, you need to, if you're going to memorize your seed phrase and you're going to be the only person like that's going to hold that, just be aware that, you know, you don't want to put half your life savings in that typically. You want to have that should be part of a broader strategy.
Body adage of it. It's some practical advice.
I mean, just, you know, we got listeners, just people listening to this.
Yeah, I'm not telling you to memorize it and not have it backed up somewhere, just to be clear.
If you often ride a motorcycle, you might want to consider additional.
Yeah, just the whole point of building wealth. I love that tattoo. You know, have your seed on your seed, but but the thing is the whole point of building wealth is that hopefully you can pass it to your kids or your grandkids, or maybe you're not going to have kids and maybe you can pass it to somebody or have it in a will to give it to the Monero General Fund or something. Yeah. So it does still have to exist somewhere, you know, or have just a dead man's switch where when you are dead, it goes live somewhere. I don't know.
Remember, there are 432 new Monero per day. For the blocked rewards. So if you memorize your seed phrase and then you forget it and lose all of your life savings, well, you just temporarily bump the price of an error for everybody else. Thank you.
That is a good point. You're basically donating all of your Monero to miners, if you think, and people who are hodlers, which I guess is a worthy cause.
All right. Actually, let me throw this up there one more time. Monerotopia has officially been moved to Mexico City, November 14th to the 17th. So we also moved the date, and it's now going to be 4 days instead of two. We're going to have two marketplaces instead of one. It's going to be amazing. But it has officially been moved to Mexico City. Guys, we got to sing happy birthday. We can do it.
Oh, yeah. Should I pull up a...
I'm going to light the
happy
candle.
Happy birthday music. Or, oh, yeah, light the candle. There you go. There you
yeah,
go.
Pull up the music. Go ahead.
I got to go get David for this. He's going to...
I don't know
if... Go get David. Go get David.
I don't know if you can pull up any music like that because it might be a copyright.
No, I think happy birthday.
Do we care about copyright here?
That's in the public domain.
Yeah,
that's two things.
I don't think happy birthday is in the public domain.
Copyrighted. No, that's why they don't sing happy birthday to you in the restaurant, because someone owns that.
That is crazy.
So they have to come up with something else. But we're not doing a for-profit thing here, so
that's true.
You know, don't worry, we're within the bounds of the law, which I'm sure everyone is really concerned.
I'm Monero Shan here.
Happy birthday. It's Monero.
Right.
Yeah,
he's like, yes, I know. I've been celebrating all day.
Yeah, he has been.
All right. You want to lead it?
I don't think he even knows the birthday song. We don't do birthdays.
He knows it in Esperanto. All right, here we go.
Surprised.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday
to you.
You guys don't know the happy birthday song?
Happy birthday to you.
All right, good. Blow it out.
Yay, Monero.
All right. Monero's 10th birthday. There we go.
1-0.
Take a bite. Gotta take a bite of that cookie for good luck.
All right.
Oh, wait, did we make a wish?
Oh, no.
We wished for full chain membership proofs by the next year.
Did we all wish that the same thing? Was there a majority on the wish? Wish consensus? So no, we forked.
Our last wish.
Yeah, more privacy.
There you go.
I wish ITV
survived 10 years.
Peer-to-peer nodes.
That was a rough happy birthday, though. Jesus Christ, guys.
Yeah,
like that's the slowest happy birthday I've ever heard.
I know. That felt funny. All right, guys, I think we get.
We're used to you being a penguin. He's just like mystified.
He's transformed. Point, guys. I've been LARPing as a penguin this whole time.
He doesn't even like the cold, I found out. He's such a poser.
Who are you calling a poser?
He's shaking his head. That's cute. All right, guys. I'm going to close it out. Any last words? Anything anyone needs to put out there? Speak now.
Happy birthday.
All right. We'll close it out there. Thank you, everybody. Happy birthday, Monero.
Yeah, see you, guys.
See you, guys. Later, guys. Later.
Thank you for joining us on this week's Monerotopia episode. We stream live shows every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern. You can find and subscribe to our show on YouTube and Odyssey, or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter or join us in the Monerotopia Telegram group. See you all next week.